using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 18th of October, year of our Lord 2021, day 581 of America held hostage of the Trump shots sent round the world. Today we're going to be talking about the vaccine revolt that is now finally coming true. Of course, it was 581 days ago that President Trump enacted the executive order. I hope you can now see how important executive orders are, and I hope you can now see that the mechanism is about economic blackmail, but more importantly, terrorism. So we're going to be talking about that as well. What exactly is happening with these executive orders, especially the one for private companies, 100-plus employees? We'll be right back. A woman raped on a train as bystanders did absolutely nothing to help her. This just happened in Philadelphia. It's one of their elevated trains. The train was full of people. A homeless man raped a woman. It was caught on surveillance cameras, and the police department was absolutely amazed. I said the whole thing was caught on camera, and the most amazing thing about it was how everybody just sat there and did nothing. An employee of the public transport finally did call the police, but nobody did anything. Now I'm hearing all the time these people, that are pushing and training pastors as trusted individuals to get their people to take the shot. And of course, one of the things that you hear from all of these people, whether it's the Pope or whether it's Al Mohler or whether it's Franklin Graham, all of these people are saying, you need to do this because this is about loving your neighbor. I see my neighbors getting raped by this government. I see my neighbors getting raped by these corporations, and I'm going to do something about it, and I hope you will as well. We used to have a medical community that used to name its hospitals after the Good Samaritan. The story that Jesus told of a man who was beaten and robbed. And the Samaritans, who were despised by the Jews that he was talking to because they were mixed. They were mixed with Samaritan people that had come in there. But they were social outcasts. And he pointed out that it was one of these people who had compassion on the man who was beaten and robbed. But let me tell you, our hospitals, many of them, named after the Good Samaritan, have become the very thieves and robbers that are beating people, leaving them to die. You know, we had the very beginning of all this, if you remember, we had, and I reported it, many pulmonologists saying, what's going on with these invasive ventilators that Trump is so manic to do this? We're seeing this as the standard of care out there. We've never done anything like this for people with this kind of respiratory illness. We've never put them on ventilators. And as we see, it's a very well-known fact that most of the people put on these ventilators die. And the pandemic nurse who was in Florida said, I didn't see a pandemic here. I was told that, you know, I was there. I wanted to help people. I heard that it was, the epicenter was in New York, so I went up there to help people. She wrote a book on it. I interviewed her. She said she got up there and they just had her sitting over to the side doing nothing for a long time, just like they did Franklin Graham, just like they did the 2,500-bed Army Field Hospital, the Navy hospital ship, all of those in New York. Of course, there was also another hospital ship in California. None of those ever used. Shame on Franklin Graham for pushing this false narrative that he knows there's no pandemic. He knows there's no pandemic. Why would he push this vaccine on people? Shame on him. And so she got there and she said, I saw all these people on ventilators, and a doctor told me, you know, over 90% of them are going to die from this thing. We blow their lungs out with it. And yet that was the standard of care. The Good Samaritans, helping people. Yeah, we've got something for them, and we can, unlike the thieves and the robbers in Jesus' story about the Good Samaritan, these people torture you to death as they're robbing you. Even worse. So the woman was raped Wednesday night on a Philadelphia train while bystanders did nothing to help her. An employee noticed the attack and called the police. They saw everything on security cameras. They did not intervene or alert authorities. The spokesman for the police department said, "It's disturbing that there were definitely people on the train and nobody did anything to intervene or to help this woman." We are sleepwalking into tyranny. We have individuals who are pushing fear and panic and pushing us into this on the media. They're also pushing hate. These same people who say that you have to do this to love your neighbor are being paid by the same organizations, the Ad Council, $250 million given to the Ad Council by President Trump to push this propaganda. And that propaganda has now turned very nasty. Those of us who refuse to get the vaccine are being dehumanized, vilified. And the next step, we know what happens with this. We've seen this play out before in Nazi Germany. If we don't turn this thing around, and if we don't stop this now, there'll be concentration camps for the dirty people. We are not going to be allowed to walk around freely in society if we are Typhoid Marys. The long-term facilities to harbor people have already been set up in Australia. They're bragging about it. I've shown pictures of that over a month ago, perhaps 2 months ago. The mainstream media was, "Look at this. Isn't this nice?" And it's like, what are you doing that for? This is not over. It's never going to be over until we take the power back. They will never give back what they have taken. We must take it back. And so now I've seen, and I've got a whole stack of stories, things that are happening around the world, but especially here in America as people are pushing back. I begin with the article from RT. John Scott Lewinsky writes, "There's still fire in the public's belly, and we're seeing more and more of it as COVID fatigue grows." He said, "COVID restrictions, once an indicator of how easily society is frightened into line, now offers an opportunity to prove that rebellion isn't dead yet." I would just say, though, that if we understand this, we are not the ones who are rebelling. They are the ones who are rebelling. They have rebelled against the Constitution that gives them their authority. They have rebelled against every law, against every ethical standard, and against their own rules. Even as bureaucracies, they have rebelled against their own rules. We are not the rebels. They are the rebels. We are standing with authority. Make sure you understand that. That's important, to know where the authority lines are drawn. But anyway, he says, "The speed with which the citizenry knelt to COVID lockdowns and restrictions, no matter how draconian or how poorly supported by research, only seems to attest to the dearth of independent minds in most corners of modern communities." And I got to say, this is where the irreparable break between me and InfoWars happened. I would not support this in order to sell storable food or supplements. And that was what was being done. They pushed this panic button. And I said from the very beginning, I was the first one to talk about how this was likely something that was released intentionally or accidentally from the only biosafety level 4 lab in China, right there at Wuhan, right there where they said it came out of the marketplace, so forth. I said, well, that's likely to have been the case. But I said, no matter. What we're talking about doing is not going to help things. It's like putting somebody with a respiratory illness on an invasive ventilator and blowing their lungs out. And that's what's happened this last year. We have murdered society with an ineffective treatment. And people have done it up and down, left and right, independent as well as mainstream. They have cashed in on this and thrown us under the bus for money. It's that timid, unthinking willingness to obey even the most ridiculous protocol that is the most treasured by the power-happy health officials and the self-appointed media experts looking to build their esteem at the cost of your self-determination. However, in recent weeks, writes the RT author, this lingering coronavirus crisis may have just reversed those indicators, hinting at a glimmer of defiance still surviving in the pockets of our culture, in the dark and quiet corners of our mind where the authorities can't yet reach. Case number one, fly any airline across the U.S. and you'll witness a now popular pop off the mask while the flight attendant isn't looking game. Well, I just got to say, have we reverted back to elementary school? I mean, are we going to be shooting spitballs at the flight attendants next? This is childish, and this is not the way we need to go. This needs to be challenged straight up, not behind their back, face to face. But he goes on to point out how these flight attendants have become airlines tattling hall monitors, and that's exactly what they have become. And they have, they're enjoying that little bit of power, just like the TSA has for many years. Sick to death of sucking air through a damp cloth, a dirty cloth, by the way. And once it's damp, it's no longer effective at all. N95 mask? No. Some wicked passengers keep an eye out for the more fascistic flight attendants, and they pop off the mask at every opportunity. I can nurse a 2-ounce cup of Coke Zero for 3 states if it means that I can keep my mask off and torment the tattling hall monitor. I received a final warning of possible arrest for enjoying the game too much on my most recent flight, but I know my technique will improve with practice. Case number two, when you visit London, be sure to travel via the underground. Coverings are mandatory on public transportation, but I discovered that no one is paying attention to that rule. Maybe 1 in 4 people traveling the tube, not YouTube, London tube, keeps a face covering in place. None of the tried and true employees bother to enforce the government's mandates. See, what this is to me, this is another indication of how we're turning into the Soviet Union. Or how we're turning into East Germany, an authoritarian snitch society, where everybody knows what's true, they pretend to comply, and then they sneak it around the corners. That is one way to survive, but it will only end when we stand up to it, not when we pretend to comply with it. So, nearly 40% of California state workers are unvaccinated, despite Newsom's orders. 40%. Of California's state workers not vaccinated. It's even better with the California Highway Patrol. They say that 48% of them are unvaccinated, and that's very encouraging. I'm going to talk. There's several cases across the country, law enforcement departments, and then in some cases individuals. Those individuals need to get out of Washington State and come to a free state. It's just that simple. We need police officers that are intelligent, that have a backbone and a spine, who understand the rule of law, who see the abuse of power, and who have had that power abused against them. Those are the kind of police officers we need. They don't want you in Washington State or California or New York, right? Come to Texas, come to Tennessee, come to some state where you'll be welcome. Florida, another one. So California Highway Patrol employees, 48% of them unvaccinated. And the Department of Motor Vehicles, it's about 40% who are unvaccinated. And in Caltrans, which is their public transportation, they say that's the division that's got the highest rate. They say still there's 30% who are not vaccinated. Are we going to have 30% unemployment? Well, no, some of those people will cave. They don't want to do it, but they will do it under pressure. But what is the number going to be? Will it be 15%? That's what the polls say, it's hardcore. They say that 30% roughly people have not been vaccinated and don't want to get vaccinated, but they feel like about half of that is soft. We'll see. The way we stop this is by standing together. United we stand, divided we fall into slavery. 40% of TSA workers, 40% of TSA workers are refusing to get vaccinated so far. And as they point out, Not having enough workers available to screen airline passengers could severely hobble U.S. air travel, especially since the November 22nd final deadline would put unvaccinated screeners out of work just days before Thanksgiving. Oh, you think Biden thought about that? Oh, you better believe he did. You better believe he did. You better believe he also thought about the December 8th deadline to take people's jobs just before Christmas. He knows that's going to put a lot of pressure on them. It's Christmas. I'm going to be unemployed. How am I going to buy gifts for my family? And, you know, you're looking at doing it right there at that time of year when people are so economically, you know, we've turned Christmas into a big commercial holiday. And it's all about this excessive spending spree. And so he puts that against somebody. And you tell them, well, you know, here's all these wonderful things. Maybe you're not going to find anything this year. Maybe the cupboard will be bare. But, you know, here's this big cornucopia of consumer goods. And don't you want to be able to buy that new video game for Junior this year? Well, guess what? You may not be able to find it because they can't find the chips because they're shutting down society everywhere. Do you want to participate in a society like that? I had somebody send me a letter, a video, of the Amish, and they said, you know, they sound kind of like you. They said three things: don't trust the government, and don't trust the schools, and I forget what the third one was here. I got it here somewhere, but don't get the vaccine, whatever. But I'd already told Karen, I said, I'm starting to feel real Amish right now. All I need to do is just shave this mustache, and I'm set to go. I need to learn a lot in order to be self-sufficient as the Amish have been. But good for them. Good for them. There's wisdom in what they're doing. And we're all going to have to get a little bit more Amish in order to make this happen. But they have shown that you can have a nice life isolated from this system. I mean, you don't have to go back to horse and buggy, but hey, I'd rather have a horse and buggy and lose my car than to kneel to this system. And it's gotten very disgusting, very degenerate, hasn't it? Across the U.S., clashes intensify between city officials and the police over vaccination issues. And this is coming from the radical progressive left, DeNews. And the way they put it, they begin their article, even though the shots have proven to be largely effective in preventing severe disease and death, it's an absolute lie. You've proven nothing except your willingness to ignore all adverse events. That's the only thing that's been proven about these vaccines. They've not been proven safe. They've not been proven effective. As a matter of fact, the vaccine adverse events reporting system showing that it is far beyond, in just 10 months, far beyond what we have seen in 30 years of all vaccines combined. So in Chicago, we have John Cantanzara. Cantanzara, I guess is the way you pronounce his name. He is president of the police union there. He's pushing back against it, and we've got a clip of his here. I'm going to play for you in a second. In Baltimore, a police union leader also told officers to not disclose their vaccination status to city officials amid negotiations over a mandate scheduled to take effect there next week. And let me just say, I have... Yesterday at church, I was talking to a friend who has been working remotely for over 5 years. And he said, in those 5 years, I haven't had a meeting with anybody for at least 3 years. And yet he works for a large software concern. And he said that even as a remote employee, he said, they haven't issued the order yet. He said, I can see it coming. They're asking me for my vaccine status. And he says, as a software developer, I understand because he says, we got to take all these classes about federal regulations every year because we're developing software that involves that. And so they really stress to us on an annual basis the HIPAA rules, where you're not allowed to give somebody's medical information to third parties. If you're not treating somebody, you have no reason at all to know their medical information. That's a law. That's a law. So he said, under HIPAA, I'm not going to tell them. But he goes, the handwriting's on the wall. They're going to kick me out, I'm sure. And And we'll have more to say about these regulations in just a moment. City leaders, but by the way, you know, when you're talking about this, that's another thing for you to understand as your employers are sniffing around trying to figure out what the situation is. Tell them to go fish. Tell them you're not going to help them to scope out exactly how many people they got to line up to replace people. I mean, just say, hey, that's they're going to know when you refuse, probably. But, you know, if you want to help with this, and if you are some of the people who, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have said, I like the vaccine. I believe the vaccine. I trust in it. I think it saves my life, and I took it. But I'm very worried about these mandates. And so some people who have taken the vaccine, who think that it's safe and effective, are still concerned about these vaccine mandates. So if you're one of those people, you should refuse as well, especially you, because they're not going to fire you. I mean, you know, when push comes to shove, you can say, all right, here it is, you know, if it comes to that. But stand with these other people right now to resist this. At least do that. City leaders in San Jose, California, decided just as the vaccine mandate was taking effect at the end of last month to allow unvaccinated police officers to remain employed through the end of the year, although they're going to add incremental discipline and incremental testing requirements. Because, you know, Fauci said, you got to do it from the inside, it's got to be disruptive, and it has to be iterative. It's got to be incremental to boil the frogs. So Lori Lightfoot in Chicago is pushing back against the police officers there. She said in a statement, she cannot and will not stand idly by while the rhetoric of conspiracy theorists threatens the health and safety of Chicago's residents. She, on the other hand, is a coincidence theorist. It's just a coincidence that you have these people who are getting the jabs and winding up paralyzed. Police officer, paralyzed from the waist down. She care about that? People dying, young people dying, she doesn't care about any of that. No, that's just all dismissed as a coincidence. It has nothing to do with anything. Maybe it's comorbidities. They never said that about COVID, did they? When it was people, the average age of people, 2 weeks before it came here, 2 weeks before that fateful day, Friday the 13th, March the 13th, 2020, 581 days ago, 2 weeks of data from Italy, and they knew that on average, the age 1 week, it was 79.5. The other one, it was just slightly over 80. And there were 2.5 comorbidities. And guess what? After about a year of this stuff, same statistics here. Was it a relabeling of the actuarial table? I think so. But now we have something that is dangerous, that is killing people, and that is the vaccine. It is far worse this year than it was last year. So in Chicago, up to half of Chicago's police officers face unpaid leave over the vaccine dispute. The city requirement for them to disclose their vaccine status. So this is where this is right now. It's this HIPAA thing. So you tell us what your vaccine status is, or we're going to put you on unpaid leave. And so the head of the police union, John Catanzara, said, don't tell them. Don't tell them. So Lori Lightfoot said he's trying to induce an insurrection by telling officers to ignore the deadline to report a vaccine status. He said, don't give them that information on their vaccine portal. He said, the best way I can put it across the board is, hell no. And so she went to court. She took him to court. Lori Lightfoot, the Marxist mayor of Chicago, took the police union official to court. And she got a temporary silence order on him. Here's what he had to say.
All right, this is going to be a super short video. We just had a court hearing about the city's temporary restraining order to prevent me from discussing the vaccine policy. The judge granted the temporary restraining order, so until Monday's hearing, follow-up hearing, I will not be able to speak anymore on the policy any way, shape, or form. In either way. So, with that being said, everybody has to do what's in their hearts and minds, whatever that is. But I will just leave you with this. Policy starts at the top in this city, and it has proven time and time again that the top of this city's policy needs to change. With that being said,
and he was holding up a John Catanzaro for mayor.
Enough is enough.
I love that. He's got an American flag, and it's got one stripe that's not white, but it's blue. And it says John Catanzaro for mayor 2023. I wonder, as a political candidate, if the judge can put a gag order on him, right? So on Friday evening, the Cook County judge is the one who put a gag order on him. And he said, you can't make additional public comments. He said, you can talk to your friends, you can talk to your family. But I'm talking about this YouTube thing, because he's been putting these videos up on YouTube like that. Catanzaro, quote, has never engaged in, supported, or encouraged a work stoppage, according to a statement released Friday by the union. She decided that she would put them on leave if they didn't disclose their vaccine status. What he said was, don't disclose your vaccine status. And so she put that punishment on. This is not a work stoppage. This is somebody standing by what is supposed to be respected under HIPAA. You understand the difference, right? So negotiations over the policy were underway when the city implemented their unilateral changes, he said. How many times have we seen unilateral changes to contracts? I mean, we've gotten pretty used to that with the Silicon Valley dictators, haven't we? They just arbitrarily, as you open up an app, we've got a new terms of service. You click that you agree with this to continue to use this app. And it goes on and on and on with all this legalese. You don't know what you're doing. You click that. And, of course, as I have experienced multiple times, whether it is social media or whether it is PayPal and Venmo, you violate our terms of services. I did? What did I do? Crickets. They will not respond. Will not respond. I've called them up, talked to them. This is kind of strange. I don't see anything in here. This is a PayPal. I don't see anything in here that says what you violated. Just said to shut you down. Well, where'd you get those orders from? I don't know. I can't see anything. This is really strange. I haven't seen this before. Okay. So, you know, they can pretend that it's terms of service that they've changed. But let's understand who's serving who. These are terms of servitude. Whether you're talking about a union that sees its contract unilaterally, arbitrarily, capriciously, immediately changed, or whether you're talking about these Silicon Valley jerks who, in many cases, you know, people, I've never invested money in these things. I never buy any advertising on social media. But some people did. I invested time in order to use it, and that is money. And so my time that I invested in that was just wiped out. But they are terms of servitude. So Catanzaro posted on social media Friday evening. He said, while refraining from discussing the vaccine policy, he said enough is enough. And that's what I just showed you there. And a message to officers in Chicago this week. He framed this issue as an employment dispute between the city and the officers. He said, I've made my status very clear as far as a vaccine, but I do not believe the city has the authority to mandate that to anybody, let alone that information about your medical history. They don't have the power to change the terms of employment, so to speak, on the fly. See, all of this, we're going to violate our agreement with you, employer-employee, city to union, we're going to just arbitrarily violate that. We're going to do the same thing with the Constitution. We're going to do the same thing with the regulatory rules at the FDA and other places. We're just going to throw this stuff out. Because now we're going to act as little dictators. You know, you do what I say today. Tomorrow I may change it. The law is in my mouth. That's what a dictator means. They dictate the law to you as they wish and change it as they wish. And we're getting accustomed, unfortunately, to living under dictators. So they can change the terms of employment. They can change the terms of just ignore the Constitution, the rest of these things. They can ignore HIPAA laws. They can ignore all of this stuff, and they can mandate whatever they wish. No, we're not going to stand for that. We must not stand for that. We must not let that happen to other people. As I started out, this is the same as watching, and we've seen these videos. How reprehensible it is. Typically it happens in New York or a big city. There was an incident maybe it was a year ago. I can't remember how long ago it was. But you saw a hotel lobby camera, and there was a woman. Turns out that she was Asian. A guy attacked her, black guy, simply because he hated Asian people. And the security guards, big, burly security guards in the lobby of the building, and the camera is back behind them. So you see them with their back to the camera, and they're watching this guy, and he's got this woman on the ground, and he's just kicking her, and they're doing nothing about that. That's reprehensible. That's reprehensible. And that's really where we are right now. Most people are people on the left, most of them, and the mainstream media are egging on these people who are kicking others while they're on the ground. That's what this is really about. The portal says you're vaccinated. Provide proof or no. I said that's the way this is operated in the city. He said he made a video, and he says, so the portal says you're vaccinated. Provide proof or no. Those are the only two options. We ask, is there a third option? Well, a third option is, it's none of your business. I'll get tested instead. Testing should be for everybody. It shouldn't be just for the vaccinated or for the unvaccinated. He said, vaccinated can spread this virus as no differently than the unvaccinated people. That's exactly right. Vote for that guy. Make that guy the mayor of Chicago. Anybody would be better than Lori Lightfoot, but at least he understands that the vaccinated and the unvaccinated alike spread this. So there's absolutely no reason to single out the unvaccinated. And we've heard this from Walensky. She says, hey, you know, if you're vaccinated, we're telling you that it's going to help to protect you. You'll still get sick, yes. You'll still go to the hospital, yes. But I think you'll get better sooner, right? We heard that with Gilead's remdesivir when Fauci changed the standard for approval for drugs and declared that it was the standard. He says, well, okay, we've done these studies, and, you know, people are dying at the same rate or slightly more with remdesivir. So, you know, it's within the statistical differences there. But, you know, if you get better, you get better 30% faster, we think. So that's going to be the standard of care. That's never been the standard of approval for these things. But if Walensky is going to say it has absolutely nothing to do with transmission, end of story. If this was about science, if this was about a pandemic, that would be the end of the story. But of course it's not. This is vaccine tyranny. The vaccine is the essential thing for the Great Reset, because with it, they can accomplish everything that they'd planned on doing anyway. Firing massive segments of society, making the transition to robotics and artificial intelligence by 2030, putting people on universal basic income. This allows them to do it with plausible deniability, to say it wasn't us, it was the virus. And now they can say it wasn't us, it was your refusal to get vaccinated. State trooper radioed in his emotional farewell before the vaccine mandated ended his career. This is a Washington state trooper based out of Yakima, forced to quit because of a vaccine mandate. He said, this is my final sign-off. After 22 years of serving the citizens of the state of Washington, I've been asked to leave because I am dirty. Dirty. And that's exactly how they see us. That's the propaganda now. That should make you very concerned. We're dirty, we're filthy, we're disease spreaders, we're typhoid Marys. He said, about my career, I've seen numerous fatalities, injuries. I've worked sick, I've played sick. I've buried a lot of friends over these years. And more than 90% of the state's workforce, they say, has complied with Governor Inslee. He's the governor of Washington State, according to the Seattle Times. But you know what? That is still 10%. And I think the mainstream media, just as they do with election polls, they play games with those. You notice that? You notice the push polls? How they'll put out polls in order to manipulate public opinion. They'll put out polls with false data. I mean, we have seen the numbers. How do you trust anything that these people tell us anymore? Why are cops afraid of vaccines, taunts the Chicago Sun-Times. So the liberal press jumps in to taunt this this guy, Catanzara, who is fighting the illegal disclosure, demands for disclosure of medical information, changing the terms of their contract, and on and on. So they come out and say, what are you afraid of, big bad boys? And a real taunting article. This crime-fighting business involves danger, does it not? It puts police in perilous situations, running into dark alleys where there might be a bad guy with a gun, charging up the dark stairs of a sixth flat, going into the foul, overheated apartment of some crazy person who might come at you with a razor. Well, you know, maybe the Chicago Sun-Times, with all that sarcasm, maybe they ought to also ask, what are the nurses and doctors afraid of? These are nurses and doctors who worked from the very beginning of this so-called pandemic. They weren't afraid of that. They didn't walk off the job in fear for that. But they're willing to walk off the job in fear of a vaccine. What do they know that you don't know, Chicago Sun-Times? What do they know that you're lying about, Chicago Sun-Times? Come on, you're not that stupid. You're just bought. I am sick and tired of people who pretend they don't know. You know, especially if you're covering this as part of the news. You know. These are people who have watched patients for 18 to 20 months, who have watched patients in terms of the COVID stuff. They have watched patients with a vaccine now for half of that time, 9 to 10 months. And they are willing to throw away a career they've invested a lot of time in, a lot of time to get that career in the first place, and decades of work, and a very good salary. And they're willing to walk away from that. And there are people walking away from their jobs with a very good salary and economic security all over the place. But especially the nurses and doctors you ought to be paying attention to. Because they know. They've been there. And I think these people at Chicago sometimes know as well. So what's with the vaccine hesitancy, this snarky writer puts there? You'll run into a burning building, but you won't get the shots that soon every five-year-old will need in order to go to school? What are you girly men out there? You won't take a shot that a five-year-old is going to get a shot? What's the matter with these criminals at the Chicago Sun-Times saying that we ought to give this to a five-year-old? You're going to give an untested shot to a five-year-old? And you're taunting these police officers? Yeah, you're going to give it to the kids because you're going to put pressure on them. You're going to say they're mature minors, the same five-year-olds that you've been putting pressure on in terms of this degenerate debauchery that we call LGBT agenda, this pedophile agenda. You've been putting pressure on these kids, say, oh, they can determine what gender they are at 5 years old, kindergarten. And so we should be able to give them chemical treatments and surgeries and so forth without their parents' authority. This is the same mindset of this. No, these people don't understand principle. They don't understand unnecessary risk. You know, these police officers carry guns. They might get shot. But are they, because they carry guns and because they risk getting shot, should they just play Russian roulette with their revolver? Because that's what you're telling them to do. You're telling them to play Russian roulette. This guy, keyboard warrior at the Chicago Sun-Times. Keyboard warrior. Chicago cops don't want to be told to take the vaccine because they're red state white bread Trumpies huddled in their walled enclaves in a blue state multicultural society. Not taking the vaccine is their middle finger to science and authority. Wow. This is what the prostitute press, the prostitute progressives look like, isn't it? White bread Trumpies. Yeah. Bring race into it. Bring Trump into it. Look, Trump has nothing to do. Trump is a sold-out pharmaceutical whore. He was from the very beginning. He was before he even got sworn in. He already sold out to the pharmaceutical industry. He had one meeting with RFK Jr., and that got his price up. He got massive contributions from big pharmaceutical companies. He put in Alex Azar, the CEO of Eli Lilly, as head of HHS. And Scott Gottlieb, who he put in as the in the FDA, is now working for, guess who? Pfizer, on the board of directors. So, yeah, this is not a Trumpy thing. This is not a white bread thing, you racists. You hate people because of the color of their skin. Anyway, no. But these people, these so-called writers, what they're doing is they're training people to despise liberty and to despise people who are not vaccinated. And at the same time, we notice that what is being destroyed, we support science. We support authority. Authority is being destroyed. Legitimate authority is being destroyed, and legitimate science is being destroyed. We are defending science and authority, not them. Science is about skepticism. Science is about empiricism. Science is about debate. Show me your numbers, and let's have a debate. Like I said last week, you know, you'll have Sanjay Gupta, a propagandist with a medical degree from CNN. He will go on and talk to Joe Rogan, a comedian, wrestler, whatever he was. And yet they will not have Sanjay Gupta debate somebody like Peter McCullough or any of these other scientists. And I could go through 30 or 40 scientists that have investigated this, know exactly what's going on, doctors, and you're not going to see any of them on CNN. That will be suppressed. They do not want to have a debate. There will be nothing other than one narrative that they decide. A military archbishop has supported religious exemptions from the vaccine mandates. This is an Archbishop Timothy Broglio in a statement. He said, "No one should be forced to receive a COVID vaccine if it would violate the sanctity of his or her conscience." And he works with the military. He goes on to say, while the Vatican's doctrinal office has ruled that it is morally permissible for Catholics to receive the vaccine, this does not inhibit individual Catholics from determining otherwise in their cases, he said. Quote, "This circumstance raises the question of whether the vaccine's moral permissibility precludes an individual from forming a sincerely held religious belief that receiving the vaccine would violate his conscience." And he says it does not. He said individuals possess the civil right not to be hindered in leading their lives in accordance with their consciences. Now, he quotes, I guess, a former pope, St. Paul the VI. But, you know, I put out over the weekend, and I said I was going to do it. Somebody sent me an email yesterday. I said, I apologize, I forgot to do that. So I put it out yesterday. I reposted sample letters that I had gotten from some people, a couple of them. One of them from an individual in the military, the Army, and another one from a pastor that covered a different aspect of this. And I also put up a message from a nurse who said, look, I've gotten my religious exemption. It was honored by the hospital. So don't give up. She said, I have helped 7 other nurses get it. Unfortunately, there were other people at the hospital who felt that it was hopeless to even try. And even though it violated their conscience, even though that was the case, and they felt that it was medically dangerous as well, they went ahead and got it because they had no hope that it was going to be honored. Now, this military archbishop, who is Catholic, and he cites a pope, St. Paul the VI, in this letter from a pastor, he quotes St. Paul the I, I guess. Well, he wasn't the first pope at all, but the Apostle Paul is who he quotes. And in this, he says, in a discussion of whether or not with the Corinthians, so he goes back to the Bible as a standard, and he says, there was a dispute with the Corinthians, and some of the people were eating meat in the marketplace. It was common for them to offer meat to idols, and since the idols had no mouths that could eat and no couldn't swallow the food, they would kind of pass it from the front to the back, and they'd sell it out the back as at wholesale prices or whatever. But it was one of the best places that you could get meat, right, unused by the idols. And so he said, look, we understand that's nothing. But if somebody feels that they should not participate in that, if they feel that that is morally tainted because it was sacrificed to an idol, and they feel like they're participating somehow in that religious ceremony, he said, well, we understand that that doesn't matter, but don't violate your conscience. He says, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it to the glory of God. And so this pastor says also, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit? And so on these issues alone, he says, I have to feel good about this. It's always wrong to violate your conscience. You can have a conscience about something that is not informed, and maybe your conscience can be more restrictive, but don't ever go the other way. Don't ever violate your conscience. So if something bothers you, pay attention to that. Don't violate it. And so in and of itself, that's the key thing here. And so these two different approaches, as I tweeted this out, I said, here's two different approaches. This one is very simple. It just says, this is a violation of my sincerely held religious beliefs, and I'm not going to violate my conscience. End of story, essentially. I mean, he goes in a little bit more detail. You can read the letter yourself. But it violates my conscience, so I'm not going to do it. Now, technically, that's really all you need to say, because there is nothing in the First Amendment that says that government gets to judge your religious beliefs. I don't have to defend or explain my religious beliefs to anybody. They're my beliefs, no matter how unreasonable they are. They're my beliefs. I don't have to defend that to you. You're supposed to respect religious beliefs, whether you agree with them or not, because very few people are going to agree on all religious points, even within the same church, as you see. So I don't need your agreement. I don't need your understanding of my religious beliefs. You just need to understand from a political standpoint that this is contrast with my religious beliefs. On the other hand, they may, if you show them the details, then that may help to convince them that these are sincerely held beliefs of yours, rather than, well, I don't want to get it for other reasons. And quite frankly, the other reasons should be honored as well. We should always have informed consent. So I'm not supporting the idea that they're removing informed consent. But I think that if you make it on religious grounds, that is a very, very strong case. And they're backing back from that because they know that they will probably lose in court and they will have to pay big damages. That's the reason that they're backing off. They don't respect your religion. They don't respect your conscience. They're just afraid that they're going to get big damages against them. And that's why you should do this. Because if they do, if your employer, whoever it is, whether it's the federal government, the military, anybody, if they deny your religious exemptions, they've got a lot of legal exposure. Remember, Fauci gave legal immunity to the pharmaceutical companies for any damage that they would do to people. But these companies and these other organizations that are violating the law, violating their own rules, they don't have any legal immunity for this. They are the ones that are going to have to pony up the money when push comes to shove with these court cases. And these are already starting. So he goes on to say, this archbishop in the military says, even if an individual's decision seems erroneous or inconsistent to others, conscience does not lose its dignity. The denial of religious accommodations or punitive or adverse personnel actions taken against those who raise earnest, conscience-based objections would be contrary to federal law and morally reprehensible. So again, my Christian beliefs, and included in that, but I wouldn't necessarily put it in, is, but you can. I mean, you can put it in as I wouldn't put in the Russian roulette aspect of it. You know, that's, my body is my temple, which means that I don't play Russian roulette with it. You should put in, if you're going to get into any details, you should put in the fetal thing, but also I would suggest going a little bit further and talking about the ongoing development in new drugs and how you don't want to be a participant in that. Because it is cannibal medicine, and it is ongoing. And it's not only are they harvesting body parts, fresh, not frozen, but they're using them to create humanized mice, transhumanism. These people have no moral restrictions to them whatsoever. And I just don't want to participate in an entity like that. Now, they'll ask you, well, do you get any other pharmaceuticals? And your answer to that would be, not knowingly, get any pharmaceuticals that were developed this way. And if I find out that they were, then I'll stop using them. But this list, this laundry list that they're pushing around to everybody, again, you can fact check that and dismiss that. Virtually every one of those drugs was developed before 1963 when they created those fetal cell lines, so they were not used in the development of those products. That is simply a media lie. Easy to debunk. Anyway, when you talk about Russian roulette, though, that is also against my Christian beliefs. And I got to ask these people, these Baptists like Franklin Graham and others, who rightfully push back against casino gambling. You know, we take the risks and you gamble and maybe you lose all your money. Maybe you get a lot of money. And they push really hard against that. And they should. Why? Why do they push against that? Well, it's an exploitation, isn't it? It's an exploitation of people who don't understand math, who don't understand risks. What is this exploitation of? This is also an exploitation of people who don't understand risk and don't bother to look at it. This kind of gambling with vaccines is much worse than the casinos these Baptists have pushed back against for so long. Because in a casino, if you lose, they don't necessarily shoot you in the head. They don't cripple you. But the big pharma casino, that's the result if you lose in that casino. You're crippled for life. You become a burden to your family, helpless, or you die. Yeah, this is like some kind of Netflix movie or something, isn't it? Right? Oh, yeah, let's roll the dice here. Maybe you get $1 million in some of these state lotteries. Maybe you die. Let's roll the dice. This is going to be fun, right? High stakes. High stakes. So Liberty Counsel on Friday announced a class action lawsuit on behalf of members of all five branches of the U.S. military, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard. They've got two Navy SEALs, four Marines, Air Force Major, and many others, all suing the Biden administration. They've got people from every branch of the military. Quote, the Biden administration has no authority to require the COVID shots for the military or for federal employees or for civilian contractors, said Matt Staver, Liberty Counsel chairman. Nor can the Biden administration pretend that the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the First Amendment do not apply to its unlawful mandates. The commander-in-chief must end this shameful treatment and abuse of our brave military heroes. And that's exactly what this is. It is unlawful. It is dictatorial. It is shameful treatment, and it is abuse. And it is not just Biden. It's every one of these corporate CEOs who are complying with all of this stuff. And as Daniel McAdams, writing for the Ron Paul Institute, says, a desperate Biden administration has now turned to terrorism. To terrorism. And this is not hyperbole, folks. He talks about the definition of terrorism. He said, you think I'm exaggerating? Well, you know, terrorism is not too strong a word. Here's what it says in the dictionary, terrorism is. It's the unlawful use of violence or threats to intimidate or to coerce a civilian population or government with the goal of furthering political, social, or ideological objectives. That is precisely what this is. This is vaccine terrorism. Terrorism. He says, for Americans watching the shocking re-Nazification of Germany, where once again the ability to even buy food depends on a person's physiological and medical status. By the way, I'll get to that in just a moment, but what he's talking about there is now one German state has said that supermarkets can keep you out of their markets to buy food if you're not vaccinated. That's what he means by the re-Nazification of Germany. He says, even though this is clearly not going to work, He said they're doubling down. Nursing shortage? Tough. Get your shot. Billions of containers waiting to be unloaded and trucked up to fill empty shelves? Tough. Get your shots. Murder Alley Chicago facing a 50% less cops because they don't want to get the vaccine and they'll be fired? Tough. Get your shot. No one to fly the plane? Tough. Get your shot. Nobody to teach? Tough. Get your shot. Doesn't matter. Nothing will deter them from this vaccine terrorism. It is vaccine tyranny. It is vaccine terrorism. And when you look at their single-mindedness and how nothing, doesn't matter if it's going to be a Great Depression, doesn't matter what they're going to bust in the supply chain, doesn't matter who they're going to shut down. People who were operating on this at the very front lines, the nurses and doctors, all the, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters to these people except 100% of us have to get the shot. That in and of itself, how many different red flags do we have to have? I mean, for me, it was a red flag, the fact that they had no liability. It was a red flag when they did no testing and Trump was bragging about it. It was a liability for me when it was clear that they wanted to use this to track people. But when you look at this and you say, look at all of these shortages, look at the economic catastrophe that you're creating. It's like, tough, get the shot, get the shot, get the shot. And they're using the media to deflect that anger that should be against them for this inflexible dictate. They're deflecting that hatred to the unvaxxed. And the public, in many cases, is buying it. Interviewed on ABC News on Thursday, Wally Adeyemo, he is the second highest ranking person in the department, Secretary of the Treasury. He is the U.S. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. Now, he looks like he's 25. He is from Nigeria. And I tweeted out the article talking about his quote. Some person came back and said, based on his name, is this guy from America? I said, no, he's from Nigeria. Perhaps he made a deal with Biden, said, you know, put me in here as the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, and I know some princes back in Nigeria, and they'll give you some money, you and Hunter. Who knows? He went on with the interview with ABC's Stephanie Ramos, and he said, well, we're seeing higher prices for some of the things that people have to buy. Oh, this guy is genius. That's why they put him in as a Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. He said, the reality is that the only way we're going to get to a place where we work through this transition? Transition to what? Oh, transition to the Great Reset. He says, the only way we're going to work our way through this transition is if everyone in America and everyone around the world gets vaccinated. Now, where do you get that idea? Well, you see, Bill Gates seems to be running the world right now, in case you haven't noticed. His ID 2020 program was to give everybody in the world a global ID because, you know, we just all need one. And these poor people in developing countries, I'm going to help them. You know, he set up the Aadhaar system in India so that, you know, these people were disadvantaged. What they were lacking in their life was, you know, not food and water and shelter and, you know, economic opportunity. No, what they were missing was an ID. And so they came up with the Aadhaar system in India. And now you have to have that number, that ID system, or you don't get any welfare benefits, you don't get any health care in that country of poor people. And that's what he wants to do to us worldwide. And that was for 2020. He's been working on that for quite a while, ID 2020. But Gates also he's got many agendas. But they all seem to converge in terms of control and depopulation. But the other big agenda that he's got, another one, not the other one, but another one, is IA 2030, Immunization Agenda 2030. And the tagline for that is, everyone, everywhere, every age, vaccinated. It's just that simple. What this Nigerian deputy Treasury of the Secretary, Department of the Treasury, said was he basically just restated Bill Gates's Immunization Agenda 2030. The only way that we're going to get into this transition, what transition? the Great Reset, which is supposed to happen by 2030. The way we transition in this and get through this transition to that society is if everyone in America and everyone around the world gets vaccinated. By the way, with everything that Bill Gates wants you to get vaccinated with, essentially. And so this Ron Paul Institute article says, well, threat? The threat is that you will eat nothing and you'll be happy. The political objective is to get the shot, right? Because that's it for terrorism. You know, there is a threat. What is a threat? Well, you're not going to have a life if you don't get vaccinated. And then the political objective is to get everybody shot with the Trump shot. But the good news is that we're already having some federal judges issue some early defeats to these people in terms of violating religious exemptions. A federal judge has issued a preliminary injunction barring New York vaccine mandate. So he's put on a temporary restricting order. This is for New York healthcare workers. And this is because of the religious exemption. This is why I say this is their Achilles heel. These people want to vaccinate you. The temporary restraining order protects all healthcare workers from the mandate, which had required them to get their first dose by September the 27th or to be fired. But we've also had another judge in California bar this. And so a judge in New York, a judge in California. Why? Because they're taking the lead on this. The California Correctional Peace Officers Association. It's a prison guards and prison workers. The judge has temporarily blocked an order on Wednesday that would require the California prison workers to be vaccinated. He said, quote, mandating universal vaccination of staff at this point in time seems at odds with the dramatic reduction in COVID infection rates within the prisons and throughout the state generally in recent months. Yeah, wouldn't you think? You know, it is at odds with the numbers that they're reporting. There doesn't seem to be any reason for it. And there doesn't seem to be any reason for them to inflict upon us massive economic damage, to create a new Great Depression. I've talked about this many times. As a matter of fact, I talked about it when Trump did it with his non-essential nonsense. And Trump did it because he put out the authority for the governors to do it. It was done by governors, Republican as well as Democrat. It wasn't just the Democrat governors. They weren't doing it on their own. They were financially incentivized, and there was a legal aspect to this, the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that was done back in 2001, right after 9/11. There was a simulation, dark winter, 2 months before 9/11, a false flag a week later, the anthrax attack, and yes, it was a very suspicious, even the mainstream press did not want to cover up for that one. And then 2 months after that, the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act to push out model legislation to the various states to give themselves all kinds of draconian powers as soon as a national emergency was declared. But the national emergency also unleashed tremendous amounts of money to be used at the personal discretion of these governors, Republican as well as Democrat. And you can see it. Exhibit A is Brad Little in Idaho, that I've talked about so many times, but you just take a look at these other Republican governors. They played along with that. So when you look at that aspect of it, and you look at the fact that these numbers are trending down, but when Trump instituted the lockdown with his financial incentives, with his legal declarations, I said at the time, I said, do you realize how many people have lost their jobs? And I said, the real unemployment figures here that spiked temporarily were over 20%. I said, do you realize if you go back and you look at the Great Depression unemployment numbers, there was only 1 year that it was over 20%. Most of the time, it was about 15 to 16% unemployment. Now, that could easily be achieved over and above what we already have as unemployment. You could add another hunk of people with these vaccine mandates from Biden that would be equivalent to what the typical unemployment rate was during the Great Depression. This is what these people are trying to do. They're trying to create a Great Depression. They're trying to create a civil war. They're involved in a revolution against our way of life and the Constitution. And they're also making moves to try to start a world war. California parents, teachers, and California parents and teachers are planning a statewide walkout to protest the school vaccine mandate. News about the planned protest spread quickly on social media before they could shut it down, with organizers suggesting that parents pull their children out of school and that teachers and staff who support the protest stay home. California became the first state to mandate vaccinations or constant testing for eligible children to attend in-person classes at public and private schools. See, this is the type of thing we've seen already before. It was California, then immediately New York, saying, we're going to take away the religious and medical exemptions for kids to attend school, and we're going to extend that to private schools, and we're going to extend it even to private religious schools. And that was really where, in New York, the pushback was with private religious schools by the Jewish community. And that was really the point of the protest there. And as all this was happening, in May of 2019, they asked Trump, just a couple months after he'd come back from Davos, but what about those vaccine mandates where we've taken away religious exemptions and medical exemptions?
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important.
He's been given the clue. The vaccinations are so important, you got to get the shots. No religious exemptions, no medical exemptions. We don't care what happens with the economy. We don't care what happens with supply lines. We don't care what happens to medical care. We don't care what happens to the police and the firemen. You know, just let the country burn down. Get the shots. Get the Trump shots. So, in California, first state to mandate this vaccine, for all these things, they said in this Fox News article, they said, well, there are medical and personal belief exemptions, religious beliefs, Fox is what that's really called. We'll see. We'll see how long that lasts. Do you think they're going to remove those as well? Parents, educators, and students across the U.S. will engage in peaceful noncompliance activities to remind government officials that individuals should have the final say when it comes to their health. The mandate for the California students took effect on Friday. One person, a doctor and a mother of five, told the press when they were reporting this, I'm just out here fighting for freedom. I want to see freedom for healthcare workers. I want to see freedom for educators. Because, folks, we're all going to stand together or we will hang separately. In the UK, dozens of MPs set to join a campaign demanding that the government permanently rule out vaccine passports. One Tory MP, Sir Desmond Swain, said, it is contrary to all of our values and traditions to have to prove that we've undergone a medical procedure to go about our lawful business. And he continued to say, it is coercive and discriminatory. It is the abandonment of liberal values. And what he means by that is liberty, values of liberty. That's what liberals used to be, people who stood for liberty, not anymore. A frightful precedent to set, he said. And I am appalled that a conservative government could contemplate such a measure. If we start down this road, the future is dark. Yes, dark winter. Another MP said, the UK government has never taken Plan B off of the table. And now they have what has happened in Wales and Scotland, it will be very tempting to reintroduce them, the vaccine passports. So I was like, well, that's just Plan B. Well, you've never taken it off the table. You're holding it there. Kyrie Irving, basketball player. Why he's refusing to be vaccinated. He says, because it's what's best for me. But wait a minute. You know, he could lose millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, right? The Nets decided on Tuesday that he would not be with the team in New York because he isn't eligible to play home games. Why? Because of a New York State mandate. A New York City, New York State, requires professional athletes on the city's teams to be vaccinated in order to practice or even to play in public venues. So I said, all right, well, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, it's not our policy. It's the state or city of New York. He says, I'm doing what's best for me. I know the consequence here. And if it means that I'm judged and demonized for that, that's just what it is. He said, that's the role that I play, but I never wanted to give up my passion, my love, my dream, just over this mandate. And he is going to give up about half of his $35 million salary by missing home games. And they said he can play on road games, but they're going to cut his money there. He said, so what? He says, it's not about the money.
Show me the money!
No, it's not about the money.
Show me the money!
No, it isn't. It's about principle, isn't it? It's about principle. Good for him. Good for him. He says, it's not always about the money. He says, it's about choosing what is best for you. You think I really want to lose money? Yeah, just kiss off $17 million. That's what liberty is worth to this guy. It is priceless. Why? Because to the extent that you give up your liberty, to that extent you become a slave. Slaves are never safe. Slaves are never prosperous. You're giving away your safety. You're giving away your money when you become a slave. It's just that simple. We don't want to be slaves to the government. People should pay attention. This is a guy who could make $17 million, but he doesn't want to take the risks. He understands it. And he also understands all the other principles that are involved in this. Look, if you took the vaccine and you were okay with it, you dodged the bullet, you played Russian roulette, and the gun didn't fire, well, they're going to have you play again and again and again. This is just the beginning. You're establishing a precedent. And so they're going to continue to do this. He says, once again, I'm going to repeat this. This is not about the Nets. It's not about the organization. It's not about the NBA. And it's not politics. It's not any one thing. It's just about freedom of what I want to do. In the UK, the Premier League, Football League, we call it soccer here, has the worst vaccination rate in the world of sports. And the Daily Skeptic comments and says, so quite a lot of footballers really do have brains above their ankles. I'm impressed. But here is, I think, perhaps the most important article of the day. Ranchers across the country have now raised over $300 million to build a beef plant in an effort to compete with industry power. I think that is the most important and the most helpful of all the things that I've seen happen. Yes, it is important for us to push back, but this is a very productive way to push back. And look at the amount of money that's involved here. I find it interesting. This is not coming out of Texas. They're putting this in. It's a Nebraska rancher. They're going to construct what they call a new sustainable beef slaughterhouse. It'll start this fall on 400 acres of land in Nebraska. And this is being spearheaded by a Nebraska rancher, Rusty Kemp. He launched an effort to build a sustainable beef plant because of the price of cattle. He said profits on the beef market have increased steadily since 2016, but the share of every dollar spent on food that goes to the ranchers has dropped from 35 cents in the 1970s to 14 cents recently. Why has that happened? Why have the people who raise the beef gone from 35% of the price of the thing going of what's sold going to them, dropped all the way down from 35% to 14%? It's because the industry has consolidated. Whenever you have a consolidated, this is one of the reasons why this shortage is not going to go away, unless we do what these people are doing. The purpose of monopolies are to create scarcity and to raise prices. They're doing this to raise prices. And the beef industry is a good example of this. As everything started shutting down, you used to have a lot of different places where you could process beef, and it was a competitive marketplace. But then there was a consolidation, and you wound up with just a few incredibly large slaughterhouses. And they were able to set the terms. They were able to raise the price and then to cut what they pay the ranchers. And so this is the solution that we're going to have to come together. And he said, We've been complaining about this for 30 years, and it's time we probably do something about it. He said, ranchers have been getting screwed long enough, and it's time we fight back, and this is how we do it. We go head-to-head with the big processors. That's a quote from the Texas Agriculture Commissioner, Sid Miller. That's exactly how you do it. And since we are talking about the agricultural commissioner here in Texas, and I see that $300 million price tag on there, that was the amount of money. Now, this is something that is going to be 400 acres, and it's going to compete with these big slaughterhouses. $300 million. When Greg Abbott got his initial money from Trump at the beginning of all this thing, and he got his state of emergency cash, the first thing he did was spend this exact sum of money, $300 million, with a contact tracing firm, a small one office place with nobody there, and a guy who ran the thing who had a resume that didn't support any of this stuff. As a matter of fact, he had some issues in his past. $300 million given to that. And that just kind of puts it in perspective, doesn't it? How corrupt our government is. Greg Abbott. $300 million for contact tracing, where you can start a processing a beef plant to compete with this industry for $300 million. He poured it into that. We hope that he didn't get anything for his money, because we don't want to have contact tracing. We don't want to have surveillance. But they're willing to put that kind of money into surveillance, but not to help us to have a more sustainable food supply. The group plans to market its products both domestically and internationally. As we see people who are walking away from very big paychecks, Gina Carano, who was canceled by Disney because of her politically incorrect stand, she then was going to do a movie with the Daily Wire. They had a movie that was set up called White Knuckle. She would star as a traumatized woman who hires a long hauler to track down an infamous serial killer. And as they were putting together that movie, Hollywood unions started debating vaccine mandates for cast and crew, and said, well, I think you're going to have to, in order to have Hollywood union help, you're going to have to get everybody vaccinated. Just the opposite of what's happening with some of these police unions. And a lot of the unions have sold out their people as well. So she said, I don't believe anybody gets to make your medical choices for you. And I'm not going to force masks and vaccines on anybody else either in order to do this movie. So the Daily Wire and Gina Carano have decided they're going to shut that movie down. And she said Hollywood decided that they were going to force masks and force vaccines on the crew. Gina walked into my office, said the co-CEO of Daily Wire, here in Nashville, and said, no, I'm not going to do that. We're going to have to find a different movie. And he said, Gina, you're a member of the union, and your union is the problem. She said, well, I'm quitting my union. Let's make a movie up in Montana where they can't get us. So instead of doing White Knuckle, they're going to do a movie, Terror on the Prairie. Actually, it's one of the few places where there isn't any terror going on right now. The rest of the country is being terrorized to one degree or the other by Biden, and it is terrorism. It is vaccine terrorism. So they're escaping the vaccine terrorism. They're going to Montana. They're going to film a movie there. Good for them. You know, by the way, when I look at this and I look at the union, it just reminds me of when I was, before I got into the professional union in order to be able to play jobs when I was in college as a musician. That was the AFL-CIO. And my first experience with that musicians union was when I was playing at Busch Gardens, and there was a guy there, an accordion player, who they had hired. Busch Gardens had gradually evolved over. I grew up in Tampa. They gradually evolved. It was initially they had the brewery there, and they would give hospitality drinks to people, and they wanted to, you know, gave tours of the brewery and that sort of thing. But then they opened up some gardens, and you could walk through the gardens and things like that, even if you were not interested in the brewery tour. And then it got bigger and bigger. They started adding an area where they had It was an open, very nice kind of a zoo thing. It was all open for the animals. They were not behind bars or anything. They were free to roam, but they had natural barriers, and you could watch what they were doing and take a tour of that by monorail so you didn't disturb the animals. And so, you know, they put you in cages and moved you around aerially. And it stayed like that for a while. And then they started putting in some rides and some other things. And then they decided that they would go full Disney. And so they had a gate where they charged people a fee. And you would go in, and the first thing you would do is they would have a whole bunch of shops and restaurants, and they wanted to keep you there. So they added live entertainment. And so that was what I was doing. I was in a band there. And there was an accordion player who, over the summer, they put together, we alternated with some belly dancers. And, you know, we would play a set and they would play a set. And then he was working, they had a clarinet player who was an anthropologist at the University of South Florida. And he was doing that over the summer. And he was playing accordion. And it was, it was passable as far as, the kind of music that you would play for belly dancers, I guess. But the accordion player was a member of the union. And they had somebody who knew him from the musicians' union local, and they saw him playing there. And Busch Gardens was not allowed for people who were in the union. They blackballed them because they had a fixed hourly rate, and they said, you're not paying enough. And it was just under the amount. But according to the union rules, you would work for 45 minutes and you'd get 15 minutes off. Well, what Busch Gardens wanted to do was they had people work for a half hour, and then they would switch off with another band. And so if you calculated it out, I mean, you know, we were making over what the union required people to be paid. But this guy was an accordion player, and he couldn't get a lot of jobs. And so we had an opportunity to take a job, even if it was just slightly under the minimum wage that the union would demand of people. He took it. But they hit him with a massive fine. They blackballed him so he couldn't get any other jobs. They hit him with a massive fine. He had to quit that job. So that was my introduction to unions. And so I guess this is her introduction to unions as well. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about some more news about the mandates, some more news about these executive orders, what is really happening with them, what is inside of them. We've got updates on energy as well as headline news. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the executive order, because there's a lot of shady business that's going on with these executive orders from Biden. As I've mentioned before, there's essentially three actions. There's one that directly affects federal employees. Another one targeting contractors, federal contractors and their employees. And then the third action revolves around businesses that have 100 or more employees. Now, as I've pointed out, there is no executive order for that third category of businesses with 100 or more employees. There is no executive order filed. And he said, well, I'm going to do it through OSHA. OSHA has not filed a rule. We're going to talk about that in a moment here as well. It appears there's a report last week that OSHA has sent an order to the White House for their approval. But as of the moment, it has not been published. And that creates yet another problem for these wannabe dictators. But let's talk about the other two vaccine mandates. First of all, when you look at the mandate for federal employees, there is an executive order and there is a rule published for these other two parts. So for the vaccination for federal employees, there's an executive order and there is and that has now been filed on the Federal Registry where you should put executive orders. And when you look at that, the term vaccination is all over the place. It's in the title, it's in the body of the text. The title, Executive Order on Requiring Coronavirus Disease 2019 Vaccination for Federal Employees. And so you'll see it throughout that executive order. That still doesn't mean that it is legitimate. It still does not, because we don't have a dictatorship. That means that executive orders are subject to being examined. We've had several of Trump's executive orders were overturned, remember? I mean, had one that he did have the legitimate authority to determine what immigration status was going to be from various states. The Supreme Court said, well, we don't find anything wrong per se with the legal statements of your executive order. There's nothing in the statements that's wrong, and you do have that power in the Constitution. But we look at your statements as a candidate, and we find that we don't like your motives in this. It's like, wow, that's a new standard, isn't it? I mean, they could say we don't like Biden's motives in this. He seems to be somehow deranged to the point that the only thing that matters to him is getting everybody vaccinated. So we could say, well, we don't like your mental state. We think you're out of it. And they could throw it out on that basis. I mean, when they did that, when Trump had the legal authority under the Constitution and there was nothing in the written order that violated any laws or anything else, they still threw it out because they just, I don't like what you said as a candidate. And that was amazing. That's where we are with our legal system. And so they could throw this out just because they don't like what he has to say, but they probably do like what he has to say. They're probably just as susceptible to blackmail and bribery as they were on Obamacare when it comes to these vaccines. But there are other issues for him to do this. First of all, he had contracts with the federal employees, and he's violating those contracts and unilaterally, as we've seen over and over again. And there is also the troublesome issue of the First Amendment and the Religious Freedoms Restoration Act, protecting people's. So we've got, not only do we have the Constitution, but we have more specificity in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to protect individual religious beliefs. So he's got a lot of places there where he can be challenged on that for direct federal employees. Now, when it comes to number two, federal contractors, and I think this is probably the most expansive part of it. Most of the people I've talked to, because we're not in Washington, we don't, I guess it'd be different if we were there. We'd be talking to a lot of federal employees. But this rule, supposed rule, that goes out to federal contractors is much more expansive. Now, this particular order, even though he did do an executive order for federal contractors, and they did publish that in the Federal Registry, unlike the one for 100-plus employees, they'd never published anything. He didn't publish his executive order, and there is no OSHA rule that has been published. But there is the publication of this executive order. But listen to what it says. Executive order on ensuring adequate COVID safety protocols for federal contractors. No, unlike this one over here, which is for vaccination for federal employees, executive order requiring vaccination for federal employees. This one is an executive order on ensuring adequate COVID safety for federal contractors. You see the difference there? He certainly doesn't have the authority to mandate this for anybody. And he is also, just like he violates, unilaterally changes the union contracts for these workers, he is also now unilaterally changing the contracts of these federal contractors. Except if you look at the statement, he actually isn't doing that. What this really will do, and in his order, again, this executive order for the federal contractors, nowhere in that order is the word vaccine or vaccination used. Nowhere. Nowhere. So what's going on with this? Well, he said by September 24th, the Safer Federal Workforce Task Force shall, as part of its issuance of task force guidance, provide definitions of relevant terms for contractors and subcontractors. So that's where you're going to see the terms used in terms of vaccines. So he puts out for the federal contractors an executive order. Nowhere in it does it mention vaccines or vaccinations, but it does mention this group that has been created. When it was created, by whom it was created, and who was on it, I don't know. And quite frankly, I don't care. It's pretty much irrelevant, isn't it? I mean, look at what we have done to our system of laws. We have had for the longest time, and it began with the IRS, the idea that we're going to have not just taxation without representation, but regulation without representation. They create the IRS, and then they would tell them, they would give them some general policy guidelines, but then the rules would be written by the IRS. The IRS, as we all know, holds you guilty until you prove your innocence, and then they will determine in tax court whether or not you have violated their rules. Now, that all began with the IRS, but now every alphabet agency does that type of thing. And so we have moved from a situation where the Congress writes laws and apply, and those laws apply to us. Yeah, those lies. Those laws apply to us. Freudian slip there. But we've moved away from that. Rand Paul has addressed that on a regular basis. He and people in the House who are like-minded, he called it the Reins Act, saying we have abdicated our responsibility to pass laws to the bureaucracy. And the worst part about that is not only are the laws being enacted by unelected people, we have regulation without representation, but when they enact these rules in the bureaucracy, the position that the government has taken, and it is a lie, it is a legal prevarication, is to say, well, because it wasn't a law enacted by your elected representatives, because this is a rule from the bureaucracy, you don't have any of the rights under the Constitution. You don't have a right to a speedy trial. You don't have a right to be presumed innocent. You have no protection against excessive penalties and all of that. And so they not only take away our elected representatives to pass laws, but then they take away our Bill of Rights as well under that whole process. But now we're going to the next step with this. What Biden is doing with this federal contractors law, he is punting this off to some organization, the Safer Federal Workforce Task Force. He's created some kind of a task force. These people are not elected. They're not accountable to you. They're not even a federal bureaucracy. This is a task force that puts together these rules. And so the task force on October the 7th, some of the people here, and I guess I should look at some of these people, Roger Abbott, Peter Dungan, Stephen Ramilly, they put together on October the 7th, they published the Safer Federal Workforce Task Force issues guidance regarding forthcoming COVID safety protocols requiring covered contractor employees to show proof of vaccination by December the 8th. And these new protocols will be enforced. And actually, these people are not the ones on the task force. They're the ones who are reporting it for this federal organization. This is the task. This is the document here. This is a summary of it with those names. The new protocols will be enforced through a contract clause that will be included in all solicitations issued on or after October the 15th and in contracts awarded after November the 14th. So they're not altering the contracts that they already have. What they're saying is for any future contracts after October the 15th or November the 14th, these rules will apply. But again, this task force, who is this? Where do they get their authority to make these kind of rules? These kinds of wide, they affect everybody in this country, essentially. When you look at the number of federal employees, but also the number of federal contractors, anybody that the federal government touches in any way, shape, or form financially, they now own with this. This is why, just like those ranchers who said, all right, we're done. You know, we've been getting a bad deal from these people for over 30 years. Let's do our own. Let's roll our own. And I know it's not an answer to say, well, you don't like social media, well, grow your own. Well, some people have done that. Andrew Torbett did that. It's not easy. Most people are not going to succeed. But we either do our own or we do something different. We don't have to replicate these systems. Sometimes different is better than replicating these failed institutions. But here is the actual Federal Workforce Task Force. They issued this on September the 24th. And the first thing that they put in here, number one, COVID-19 vaccination of covered contractor employees, except in limited circumstances where an employee is legally entitled to an accommodation. You notice that? They have that caveat there. Except where an employee is legally entitled to an accommodation. So what kind of accommodations are we talking about? They have a bunch of questions and answers in this task force rule. And you know, this is the sort of thing when Nancy Pelosi and they passed Obamacare, you know, a couple of thousand pages. We talked about how large it was. Now, this has become standard operating procedure because that's what happens when you set up precedents. That's why precedents are so very important. And that's why I complain so much about the precedents that President Trump set. That's what he was. He was a giant precedent. He could do these types of things, get away with it, whether it's red flag gun laws or bump stock bans, an executive order banning an attachment, something that's never even been regulated by the bureaucracy, but then banning that and doing it by executive order, bypassing the legislature. That was a precedent that Trump set. So these precedents are very important. And so when Nancy Pelosi did that with Obamacare, just dropped this several thousand page bill, and we talked about, well, you know, that's equivalent to a stack of Bibles, if you look at the average size of a Bible, and it's all written in very dense legalese. And she said, well, we just got to pass it, and then we'll find out what's in it. They'll find out what's in it when the regulatory agency that they handed over to starts making the details. And this is the way that they operate. Everybody said, she's crazy. Well, that's the way it works now. They set that. They allowed that precedent to be established. And now you see this being done, whether it's Republicans or Democrats who are in charge of the legislature. They always drop this several thousand page bill, and they give everybody about 24 hours to take a look at it. And everybody's voting on something that they don't understand and that they haven't read. And that has become standard operating procedure now. So now here's a new way to do government. You set up a task force, and you tell them to write the rules, and then they give you some questions and answers. Here's a question. If a covered contractor employee performs their duties in or around only one building, site, or facility on a campus that is controlled by a covered contractor with multiple building sites or facilities, do these people have to get vaccinated? So in other words, you've got a contractor and you've got an employee who is isolated by themselves over in another facility, and they said, oh, yeah, you still got to get it. You got to get it because they could mingle with somebody. Now, again, maybe somebody needs to tell this task force to look at what the CDC is saying about this. There's absolutely no difference in transmission, but they're pretending that there is between vaccinated and unvaccinated people in order to push this terrorism through. This is vaccine terrorism. Another question answer. How does this guidance apply to covered contractor employees who are authorized under the covered contract to perform work remotely from their residence? And this is what my friend was saying yesterday. You know, he said, I've worked remotely from home for 5 years. I haven't even had a meeting with anybody for 3 years, face-to-face. And he says, so why should I have to get a vaccine? Well, because if they're federal contractors, this is what this new rule from this mysterious task force says. They say, well, an individual working on a covered contract from their residence is a covered contractor employee and must comply with a vaccination requirement, even if the employee never works at either a covered contractor workplace or a federal workplace. See how this works? It's like, but wait a minute. You're shutting down hospitals. We were told at the very beginning that we had to shut down all of society so we could flatten the curve. Now, we're going to extend this pandemic by flattening the curve, but we have to do that because otherwise we're going to overwhelm the medical facilities. And now you're saying, we don't care about overwhelming the medical facilities. We're going to fire however many nurses and doctors don't get it. We don't know what that number is. We don't know how vital they are to the operation of the business. And we don't care. We're just going to shut them down. We're going to cripple the hospitals now. And in this order, they say, well, what happens if you got somebody who's working by themselves in a building on the grounds, on the campus of this big contractor? Do they have to get the vaccine? They don't have anything to do with the contract. Oh, yes, they do. Because they might come in contact with somebody. So then the next question, well, what about if they're remote and they don't have any contact with anybody? Oh, they still got to get it too. See, it's never been about science. This is terrorism. It's about psychological warfare. It's about behavioral psychology. Oh, yeah, you got to get it even though you got multiple buildings here because it could have some contact. But, well, okay, so here's somebody who just works from home and never comes in. No, they still got to get it. It doesn't matter. These people are singularly focused on 100% vaccination, and that should be a giant red flag to you. Does the guidance apply to small businesses? Yes, it does. Even less than 100 employees, if you got a federal contract, you take the coin from the king, you're going to take the orders from the king. And that principle has applied from day one. That's why I marked this. I know a lot of Trump supporters get really upset with me. I said, no, it's all about the money. That's how you get the transgenders to rape the girls. You reward them with money, or you say, we're going to take away the money that we're giving you. That's how you get all these companies, no matter what size they are, to force vaccinate their employees. So the Federal News Network, in terms of talking about this, the federal employees, what can they expect if they're seeking a medical or religious exemption to the federal vaccine mandate? I said, well, the Biden administration didn't detail exactly what kinds of medical or religious reasons might grant an employee an exception to the federal vaccine mandate, but it did offer some hints about what employees might expect if they pursue that route. The sample form that they put out says to be eligible for a possible exception, you must first establish that your refusal to be vaccinated is based upon a sincere belief that is religious in nature. The sample form also asks employees to describe how long they've held their particular religious beliefs. See, these are religious tests. None of this that Biden is doing, none of this has a leg to stand on under the Constitution. I don't have to give you my personal testimony. I don't have to explain my religious beliefs to you. It's none of your business. That is a founding principle of this country. This country was founded on the desire for religious freedom. It was founded on the desire for freedom. And the people who came here, you had two groups. You had Jamestown who came here. They were predominantly for economic reasons. But when you look at the Pilgrims who established the Mayflower Compact, first time that you had people voluntarily come together and write and create a new form of government. They did that, and they were doing everything they did was based on escaping religious persecution in England. And that is why this is part of the First Amendment. When you look at the American Revolution, 1776, it was the people who were pastors who were the Black Regiment, they called them. They were galvanizing people. And yet I see in Red State website and other places, I saw this pearl clutching happening over the weekend about Kamala Harris, and she created some PSA because the Clinton's crony, Terry McAuliffe, is doing really poorly and Virginia. They're worried about that election. So they created, they had Kamala Harris do a PSA about how important it was for black people to go to the polls, but more importantly, specifically endorsing Terry McAuliffe. And they were playing it in black churches this last weekend. And so you had all these conservatives clutching their pearls and saying, they can't do that. I mean, we've got the Johnson Amendment that says that they can't do that. Well, that sounds like you amended the Constitution, doesn't it? That was Lyndon Johnson who got the IRS to amend their regulatory code, saying that if you are a church, you can't talk about politics or we will take away your religious exemption. So it's an amendment to the IRS code. It's not an amendment to the Constitution. As a matter of fact, it flies in the face of the Constitution. LBJ did that because he had some churches that were criticizing him. So he decided he would use the IRS to gag them. Now, several years ago, it's probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I started talking about Pulpit Freedom Sunday. It was organized by a couple of courageous pastors who said, we're not going to let the government tell us what we can say. And so they specifically talked about policies and individuals and endorsed them. And they recorded it, and they sent the tapes to the IRS, and they said, do something about it. And the IRS didn't do anything. And so those three or four pastors grew to half a dozen the next year, grew to a couple of dozen the year after that, and it got bigger and bigger, and the IRS never wanted to take up that challenge. You see, the government will intimidate you with the aura of authority when they have no authority. And they don't want to be challenged in court. Another good example of that was Jeff Sessions, you know, Mr. Reefer Madness himself. He absolutely hated our government's unconstitutional mandate prohibiting marijuana. I'm not saying that marijuana use for recreational is, I'm not advocating that. But what I'm saying is, first of all, prohibition doesn't work. Secondly, they needed to amend the Constitution, which is what they did when they prohibited alcohol. They amended the Constitution. The 18th Amendment prohibited it. The 21st Amendment brought it back. We have marijuana prohibition because of a UN set of regulations that were given to Richard Nixon. The UN passed the four schedules in 1961. They gave it to Richard Nixon in 1971. He called it his war on drugs, but it was the UN's war on drugs. And so when we look at the way the government will intimidate people, you know, Jeff Sessions is making all kinds of threatening statements, rattling his saber, but as much as he hated marijuana and wanted to purge it everywhere, he never did anything. Why? Because he didn't want to have that court challenge. In the same way that the IRS wants to intimidate pastors about what they can say, but will not take action on it because they know they're going to lose in court. It's a slam dunk loss. And so what they're doing here with this is essentially the same thing. What Biden is doing is he's intimidating people. In the same way the churches have been intimidated by the IRS, the Biden administration is now intimidating companies and they're intimidating employees. But these companies, for the most part, want to have an excuse to fire people. So they're going along with it. They don't have to. They could have a business model that didn't include federal contracts. But in many cases, these airlines and others who have gotten money because they were essential, they now want to be able to reduce their workforce, and this gives them an excuse to do it. They don't have to do it. And there are religious exemptions, and if these people are challenged, they are going to lose. And you do not have to justify or explain your religious beliefs to any government employee or any corporation. And we have not only the First Amendment, but we have the Religious Restoration, Religious Freedom Restoration Act that are part of that. It is throughout our code, the federal code, it permeates the federal code that you will not discriminate against people because of religious beliefs. And that includes these vaccines, as much as they want them. So this is where we have to stand up for our rights or we lose them. And this is where these pastors need to stand up for your rights or they're going to lose them as well. Let me tell you, they're going to come after you in every way possible. If you let them sweep aside this religious exemption for the vaccine, they're going to come after you in every way they can imagine. They got the LGBT people are salivating at the bit, waiting to come after you and to sweep away all your religious liberty. And if you bow down to this mark of the beast system that they're setting up right now, they will sweep you away. And it's good riddance, quite frankly. If you won't stand up for what you believe in, if you won't stand up for liberty, and if you won't stand up for your right to be able to worship God as you see fit, you don't deserve to have a church building. You don't deserve to be a pastor of a church. The sample form also asks employees to describe how long they've held their particular religious beliefs. That's grounds for challenging it right there. Whether they've received any other vaccine in the past. That's a violation of your HIPAA laws. If they have, they would have to explain why their religious exemptions apply to certain vaccines but not to others. Again, none of your business. And whether there are certain products or medicines that they avoid due to their beliefs. Again, none of your business. Requests for medical accommodations or medical exemptions will be treated as requests for a disability accommodation. They'll be evaluated and decided under the Application Rehabilitation Act standards for reasonable accommodation, absent undue hardship to the agency. So throw out the Americans with Disabilities Act as well. So I mentioned the two letters, and I put these up on my social media. I put them up on Twitter. I put them up on Gab. You can find me, Libertarian, on Twitter, on Gab, The David Knight Show. And so I put these up along with the encouraging letter from the nurse, because I had some people ask me for it. And I think they kind of cover the gamut. As I said before, I read you the other letter from a pastor who said, this violates my conscience. Same thing that the archbishop in the military was saying. Look, it's always wrong to violate an individual's conscience, and we're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that as an employer. You're not. There's laws against that. You're not allowed to do that as the government. There's laws as well as the First Amendment against that. And so it's kind of up to you whether you want to go into detail of that to convince them that you're sincere. So that's why I put this other letter up there, a very well-written letter from somebody who's in the Army. Took out his personal information, but he's got enumerated points. He's got eight of them here. First one is, I'm requesting the religious accommodation. He states what he's requesting. Second one is, he says, this is based on my belief that the Bible is a living and true word of God, and I believe that receiving this COVID vaccine in its current form would be considered an egregious sin. Although I was raised a Baptist, I do not claim to be faithful to a particular denomination, but rather to the word of God as presented in the King James Bible. See? So that right there says, well, I don't really care what Franklin Graham says. It's what the Bible says. And so that, you know, oh, yeah, we got these religious leaders who are stabbing you in the back and say you ought to get the vaccine. It's like, no. And then the third point, he says, the mRNA technology. He goes, we know that they've said that it redirects the body's cells to produce a protein that is designed to do so by introducing a foreign code. I believe this is taking away from God's design. In other words, God designed the human body, you know, DNA, the RNA, it's a code. It defines us. I think this is taking away from God's perfect design. I think it is tampering with what God has designed. And I think that we should not be reprogramming God's blueprint. And he puts in some Bible verses about that. Then number four, he says, second point of this is that Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson have all used fetal tissues in development or in manufacture. And so he talks about that. Number five, the third point of this is about the very controversial mark of the beast. And so he says, it's very controversial. He says, this does fit the profile of what is to come and what is already happening around the world. He said the mark will be something that all people will be forced to take in order to do commerce, in order to buy and sell. We can already see this happening today by state mandate and or by recommendations enforced through private corporations. I personally do not believe this shot is the mark, but I believe that it is setting a precedent that will pave the way for the mark. Today it is a card. Tomorrow, in order to fight forgeries, it'll have to be something on your person or in your person, that type of thing. So he makes that statement. And then he goes on to say, if given an accommodation, I'd be willing to do masking or social distancing. I'd even be willing to do testing and all this sort of thing. So he puts that. So you can take a look at that and see what you want to use for that. Let me just say, in terms of the mark of the beast, you know, when I look at, and again, I'm not dogmatic about Revelation. There are so many different interpretations, and I have seen different interpretations from different Bible teachers that I have a great deal of respect for. And I don't necessarily agree with teachers on every issue. I can still have a lot of respect for what they have to say, and I can still learn from them. And we need to expose ourselves and not get taken captive by one little group or by one teacher. And so we should look at these different teachers and evaluate what they have to say. It can help us to understand the Bible as we read it. And so I'm not dogmatic about eschatology, the end, the study of the end of things. I am dogmatic about soteriology, what it takes to save somebody. I've spent a lot of time on that, about what it is for justification, what sanctification means. Those are things that are, I think, very clear. But although there is still disagreement about that with a lot of different people. So I believe it's Christ alone and by grace alone that I am saved to, and that God's work in my life does not take away my free will, but it changes what I want to do, and it changes me. And if I don't see that change, I should be concerned about that. And if I don't see that change in other people, I should help them with that, you know, gently question them. I think that's our Christian life. So when it comes to eschatology, there's so many different variations of this, and a lot of it comes down to people coming up with different timelines of when things are going to happen. There's two big divisions. One of them, the big division, is millennial. So a lot of people don't think there's going to be a millennial kingdom. Other people think that there will be, and that we are at the time before that, and that Christ is going to come back before the millennial kingdom. Other people think Christ will come back after the millennial kingdom. So you have premillennial and you have postmillennial. And then the premillennials are broken down into when Christ is going to come back during the tribulation that they look at. So you have all these different opinions. And it is a very symbolic book, a lot of allegories. And there are parts of it that people will, nobody takes all of it literally, but it varies depending on how much people take it literally. And so they all have differences of opinion with that as well. And, you know, when I look at these different eschatologies, I say, well, you know, that one's got a good point there, but then they have a problem over here and vice versa. It's one of the reasons why I'm not dogmatic about that. But a lot of people will break fellowship with other Christians if they don't agree with them on eschatology. I would just say that when I look at it, doesn't it make you stop and think that a book written thousands of years ago, a letter, in this particular case, Revelation is a letter, doesn't it make you stop and think when it lines up so well with what is happening today? I mean, that is something that is the specificity of what is now happening, literally, is beyond anything that you'd see from Nostradamus or some of these other people. I mean, Nostradamus, they can fit things in because it's a quatrain and it's poetic and everything. These are specific. Specific. And so that ought to, and by the way, all that stuff about Nostradamus, one of the reasons why I looked at all this QAnon nonsense and it's like, well, first of all, this person doesn't want to say who they are. You're going to make predictions and you're going to tell me this stuff is happening and they put your, sign your John Hancock on it or we got nothing to talk about, first of all. Secondly, you speak in riddles so that you can say if it doesn't happen, well, you just misinterpreted my riddle. It was riddled with nonsense, quite frankly. But when we look at this, to me, this is a very significant thing. And I think it's amazing. It is amazing. And yet you see people, like I was talking about on Friday, a guy named Curtis Cheng. He's been a professor at the very mainstream, woke, liberal Fuller Seminary. Teaches at Duke University at the thing there. He's not a pastor, but he's been given a lot of money by the Ad Council and by the COVID Collaborative. And he's got a whole series of videos that he's put together for pastors to talk to people and to get them to take this vaccine. Oh, it's safe. Oh, it's loving your neighbor, and on and on. One of the things that he does is the Mark of the Beast. And what he says about it, he says, well, you know, I've been around for a long time, and I've seen Hal Lindsey's late great Planet Earth, and I've seen people say that Social Security was a mark of the beast and we shouldn't be getting that and so forth. And I have seen this happening over and over again with all these different numbers that are being assigned to us. And he goes, and so this is just another one of those cases, and you should pay no attention to any of that. Well, let me say this to him. Do you really think that your theology, I think, when you say that the mark of the beast is going to be something that's put out there and it's a, here's a deal, you know, you sign on this bottom line and you're going to consciously take this thing. I think your theology is informed by Goethe more than it is by the gospel. Yeah, Goethe was the German, probably their most, their Shakespeare, if you will, right? Just like Cervantes was kind of the Spanish Shakespeare. But both Goethe and Cervantes didn't have the massive number of works that Shakespeare did, but they still had a big effect on those languages. And the story that Goethe is famous for is Faust. The idea that and this has been done over and over again, you know, we've even had musicals like Damn Yankees, you know, based on this whole Faustian idea that the devil comes, he makes a compact with you, offers you a contract, and you get something that's, you know, special circumstances or special abilities or whatever. You sign on the dotted line and you sign yourself over to the devil. Well, you know, I'm not saying that people can't explicitly make a conscious decision that they're going to go the dark side for financial gain. That does happen. But I would say that typically it is not a blowout like that, but it's a gradual process. As a matter of fact, one of the pastors that I had in the past, he said, you know, when you see somebody fail in ministry or something, and it's a very famous person, and they get caught up in some kind of a sexual scandal and the whole ministry is taken down, he says it's usually a drifting situation. It isn't like, you know, all of a sudden you had a tire blowout and the car goes swerving off the road. It's usually more like a boat that you're not paddling, or you're paddling just a little bit, and it's drifting, and all of a sudden it accelerates and it goes over the falls or something. And when we look at our life, we are always, I think, you know, Satan is the father of lies, and I don't think he's necessarily going to lay all the cards on the table. I don't think he's going to make it clear. I don't think it's going to be so obvious to people. And so to me, I find it pretty obvious, pretty amazing that it is as obvious as it is right now. With this, you will not buy, sell, travel, go to school, do anything unless you take this. Because understand that a beast throughout the Bible, whether you're talking about Daniel or Revelation, a beast is really representative of government. So you're going to take the mark of the government? Are you going to worship the beast or worship the government? Because that's what we're seeing right now. I mean, what I'm seeing on CNN, what I'm seeing on these pieces, like I talked about earlier, I'm seeing a lot of government worship. Government is going to save us. As a matter of fact, I meant to get the clip today, but I forgot to do it. I was looking after Norm Macdonald died, and he was on Larry King. And they weren't talking about COVID or any of that stuff, but you know, he was just talking about his beliefs, and Norm Macdonald was kind of working it out, and sometimes he'd be kind of ruminating on live TV about it, you know. And kind of like I do here right now, I guess. But in it, he goes, well, you know, I'm just gonna... And so Larry King challenged him on it, and he said something about, yeah, but, you know, science. And he goes, well, I don't necessarily believe everything science says. And Larry King goes, what? You don't believe science? I mean, he was immediately on it. The voice goes way up. What? You don't believe science? It's become a religion for people. You know, he was specifically talking about DNA and things like that. He says, well, I don't know about DNA. I mean, I'm told that it's this and I'm told that it's that. But, you know, he says, scientists are always changing their minds about things. They don't ever seem to have it nailed down. And so I'm somewhat skeptical about science. Oh, you got to believe in science, you know, says Larry King. So we worship science basically we're worshiping the government because they're the ones who are telling us what science is. We're not doing science. We're being told science. And so when you look at all of this stuff, I mean, you really need to think about this. And as I said, I had, and I apologize to the listener if he's listening now. I haven't gotten back to him. It was I'm going to write him directly. And he said it was a letter. He had just joined a church, but then he had some concerns about the vaccine. And the pastor said, "Well, you know, we're not going to we're not going to take sides on this in terms of people in the church." And you know, and I saw this throughout the lockdown as they were telling churches they couldn't meet. Many churches said, "All right, well, let's be cautious. Let's try to cooperate with everybody." But then they got to a point where they realized that nothing is happening. So now am I going to continue to keep my church closed simply because the government says so? And so there's a several-month period there where people are working through that. And so we need to give people time to work through that. People can be wrong about things. And the pastor said to him, he said, "You know, you understand that all of your sins are paid for by Christ, and you just need to... That's the key thing for you to understand. But here's a link so that you can understand more about vaccines." And it was a link to a propaganda thing. Now, what do we understand about that? Well, you know, this guy lacks discernment. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you leave that church because there's going to be other people there. I mean, you've got to stop thinking of the church as simply being from a top-down structure, right? You have something to bring to that church. You're not just a passive observer. And if you have some discernment about that, not in an act of rebellion, but just in a quiet way, you can talk to people about that. And who knows, you might be able to save somebody's life that was thinking about getting one of these things. And it's an opportunity for you to engage in discussion with people. But, you know, you might want to also be looking around to see if you can find somebody that really does have discernment, because this is going to be a period of time when things are going to change very rapidly, and we need to have people who have discernment, who see what's coming. And a lot of people had just focused for years on pietism and on, theoretically we do everything that the Bible tells us, and if they tell us to put propellers on our heads and spin them, we do that and so forth. And it's like, no, that's not biblical. There is a source of authority. We need to ask what legitimate authority is. There's going to be competing sources of authority. What does the Bible say about that? We don't live under a Roman emperor anymore, and all of this. You know, so it's important to have somebody that's got discernment, but that doesn't mean that you can't help to, with love and gradual aspects, that you can't help to influence that conversation and enlighten people as well. And that might be your responsibility there. I want to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with energy, with supply chains. What's happening with these ports? Is Biden fixing this with his orders? It turns out that there's quite a few things that are involved in us not being able to get goods, and it doesn't have anything to do with extending the hours of Walmart. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, let's talk about what's happening with supply chains. And as these supply chains are being disrupted by the gremlins in the Biden administration, and we're talking about gremlins, the original version of that was the Twilight Zone episode. We had William Shatner, the guy who just went into space, oldly going where no one that old has gone before. He was in that Twilight Zone episode, and he's a passenger, and it wasn't about masks. He'd look out on the wings, and there was something that was tearing the engine apart, and he would call the stewardess over, and as soon as she would look, it would stop, and that type of thing. But we're looking at, as you got these people in the Biden administration essentially acting like gremlins, you know, just going to destroy the engine of the economy here, piece by piece, bit by bit. We're also looking at what I would call the supply chains of slavery, because the supply chain is now going to be used to enslave us. The monopoly-seeking, inflation-causing shutdown of supply chain is something that has always been something that the big multinational corporations have been seeking. This booster stage of cheap goods was just getting everything set up. And now they're ready to reap the rewards of their monopoly status by creating all kinds of supply chain disruption, scarcity, and raising the prices concurrently with that. And you add that aspect of price raises to the labor shortages, to the inflation that's been cooked in by the Federal Reserve. I mean, it's just a perfect storm of things that are coming our way. And yet the Babylon Bee correctly sums it up. Just off the coast of California, these backed up cargo ships that have nothing to do. They just decided that they would organize and they would reposition themselves to spell out, "Let's go, Brandon." So they have a whole bunch of cargo ships there. There you go. "Let's go, Brandon," there for the satellites to be able to see. They said the captain who organized it said that he and other ship captains wanted to spell out a different phrase, but it was rated R. Babylon Bee. But here's the truth behind Biden's 24/7 port operations pledge. This is written by the author of a book, Trade War, Containers Don't Lie, Navigating the Bluster, and also another book in 2019, Dynasties of the Sea, The Untold Stories of Post-War Shipping Pioneers. Well, Lorianne said, when you tear away the frills of Biden's supply chain announcement, it is essentially a political pawn to push the infrastructure bill. The ugly truth is that the congestion will not be alleviated anytime soon, and it will definitely not be any better in the next 90 days, you know, before Christmas. She says, just common sense and math. You can't blame private sector companies for this plan's future letdown. Trade takes people in coordination among all the players within the supply chain. The ports and all the stakeholders within these ports must be on the same page when it comes to a 24/7 operation. So therefore, the holes in this announcement are numerous. First of all, 3,500 additional containers moved in a week is 200 containers a day. During the month of August, the San Pedro Bay ports moved 1,241,000 TEUs. This projection of 3,500 does not move the needle at all. That's only 14,000 containers. And remember, we were talking about 1.2 million, right? That translates just to 1%, and that plan is being called a sprint by the Biden administration. His announcement of 24/7 ports is not accurate. Only one terminal out of the 12 in San Pedro is operating 24 hours a day. The 24/7 operation at the Port of Los Angeles is not even happening. When asked if the port was going 24/7 on Thursday, the day after this announcement, the port press office answered in an email, "Not one marine terminal will go 24/7 tomorrow." This is a process to work the details of expanded hours leading to around-the-clock work in the private sector. It will take all private and public sector partners to operationalize this. There are no fast levers, but we have more cargo than ever, and we need to make it safely and securely and so forth. So the ports, as of right now, are just operating as they did before Biden said anything. See, he likes to think that he can make these pronouncements and the whole world changes. Well, it doesn't, especially when it comes to producing anything. He can punish people. He can rob people and call it a fine. He can do a lot of things like that, but he can't produce a single thing. Government doesn't produce anything other than regulations and fines. Oh, that's right, and it prints a lot of money to create inflation. Truckers, for example, they said the reason for this lack of 24/7 is because truckers are not going to work 24/7 if they can't pick up containers at the warehouse that's closed. So the flow of trucks moves when everyone in that flow is working. So in other words, if you're going to the ports, you can't make the ports work 24/7 if the rest of the supply chain isn't working 24/7. It doesn't make any sense. It's just like if you go in and, as we learned last year when this was first rolling out, you had the essential versus a non-essential, and you say, all right, we're going to shut down restaurants because they're not essential. Well, what happens then is that you start having everybody go to all, everybody has to now eat at home. And so now you've got a much bigger load on the grocery stores. And everybody has to go to the bathroom at home as well instead of, you know, going to places where they worked or going to restaurants or whatever. So you wind up with a shortage of toilet paper and you wind up with a shortage of food. Why? Because you and you have people who are producing the food, people who are pouring the milk down the drain because they can't get it to market. Why? Because they were selling into the restaurant business or the cafeteria business or the schools or whatever. And now those are closed, and so they can't sell to them. But they have no way to package this to get it on the shelves of the grocery stores. The same thing with the toilet paper. So when you shut down something arbitrarily in the supply chain or even in the output of the supply chain, it backs up and it breaks it in another place. So the same thing here. The 24/7 thing is not simply about the ports, although they are a bottleneck, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. The flow of trade moves when everyone and the flow is working together. The question is, what can be done to change the behavior of those in the supply chain to go 24/7? Well, what is needed is less government interference. People know how to make pencils, going back to Leonard Reed's iPencil. You didn't have somebody in government design a pencil. People in government were not moving all the stuff around. We've seen how that works when the government has that arrogance to think that they can do that and they can do it better. I mean, you can see what happens in the Soviet Union, right? People are starving. They got nothing on the shelves. Why? Because they decided that they would determine how everything was going to be allocated. And even if they have the best motivations, even if they are the smartest people, they can't do that because they don't have enough information. It's the interaction that people are doing that is like the difference between a very slow CPU, which is what government is, a central processing unit that operates very slowly and doesn't have very much input to know how to make those decisions, versus a very large, very fast distributed neural network. And that's what the free market is. It's a neural network where people are constantly being able to see what's happening and making micro adjustments. And that's why that's better than a central planned economy. But there's something else that's going on the ports. Here's what one trucker points out.
Let's see what's happening. See all these trucks? All those trucks? All those trucks. See all those trailers right there? Well, see those big green things behind all those trucks? I am in Tacoma, Washington. I have watched those cranes all day and not a single one of them has moved. You've got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Nine major cranes at this massive port. Not a single one of them has moved today. All these trucks right here, right there. All these trucks out here. All of them are waiting for a load. They are sitting here doing nothing because the ports aren't working. So don't think that it's because of a driver shortage. It's not. These guys need work. The freight's sitting right there. Cranes aren't operating. So that's the truth.
Yep, that's it. And you can see that. I mean, that was a, if you didn't see that report, if you're listening to that, it was a massive parking lot of trucks. And you could hear the noise of them with their idling engines. They're sitting there all day with their engines idling because, you know, you don't want to start and stop these diesels. But as he points out, we've been watching this, and you got all these massive cranes, and so we can see them from far. They haven't moved all day. They've done nothing all day. What's going on with this? Is there some agenda here why they're not doing this? Well, part of it is, this story from the Washington Examiner, truckers say that the crane operators are lazy, that they're making $250,000 a year, that they are what is behind this crisis. Well, that's certainly one explanation for it. They said they have a very powerful union. One trucker said who had spent hours waiting at the L.A. County ports. And this guy was showing, he was in, what was it, Seattle? It was in Washington State. I forget exactly where it was. He announced at the beginning of the video. But this person who was at L.A. said saw the same thing. He said, in 15 years of doing this job, I have never seen them work slower. Are they doing a work slowdown? Did somebody tell them to do a work slowdown? Is that what's really going on here? While you virtue signal about, well, we need more money for infrastructure, and I'm going to save everything. Is that really what's going on here? How many times have we seen the Biden administration lie to your face about this kind of stuff? But anyway, he says, I've been doing this for 15 years. I've never seen them move slower. The crane operators take their time, like 3 to 4 hours just to get one container. And you can't say anything to them or they'll go help somebody else. Oh, don't get them angry. And they say the same thing happens with their supervisors. Their supervisors, because the union is so powerful, their supervisors are afraid to criticize them for not doing any work. One person said, this is a reflection of the management they have down here. The inmates are running the asylum. The managers are all afraid to say anything because the operators are so powerful they get the management fired if they don't like them. And he says, most truckers are independent contractors. They're paid per container delivery. They make a fraction of what the crane operators are paid. They only arrive at the docks after receiving notification that the cargo is ready for pickup. And then they have to wait hours for the shipping containers to be taken off of the ship and put onto their trucks. This is frustrating. And those who have complained were swiftly dealt with, as they say. They'll go to the police and they'll kick you out and they'll tell you to leave. And then you get banned from ever coming back here in the future. See that? Don't you dare criticize me. Oh, you know, we got a lot of that happening now in America, don't we? While three-hour waits are common, some truckers have been at the port for days. For days. As he's pointing out, he said, look, all these trucks, the engines are running. I've watched these cranes out here. Not a single one of them has moved at all day. He said, they'll wait here all day, and then they come back the next day. He says, I know someone who kept coming back, and eventually the terminal will charge you a storage fee if they don't give you a container. They'll charge you for parking, they'll charge you for the container being parked there. Even though these guys refuse to unload it, they'll then charge you for what they refuse to unload. So as Reason Magazine points out, no, Joe Biden cannot save Christmas. It's tempting, they say, it's tempting, of course, to believe in an all-powerful character who is capable of uniting the country politically, of getting everybody vaccinated, of delivering Christmas presents to all the good boys and girls, through nothing more than his sheer goodwill and the flexing of state power. But now inflation is taking off like a team of flying reindeer. You know, and pretty soon, I would add, any kid would be grateful for a lump of coal in their socking, right? Because it's going to be a cold winter and we're going to be short of a lot of things. But the problem with believing in an all-powerful government is the same as believing in Santa Claus. Yeah, you know, for the longest time, Democrats acted as though government was Santa Claus. It could give you anything. You know, you just give it a list, and you don't even have to check it twice, and you don't have to be no consideration as to whether you're naughty or nice. You just get whatever you want from government because it's a giant Santa Claus. Well, the problem is Santa doesn't exist, but God does. And now the Democrats think that God, that government is God. That's why I call it Godverment. You know, that's the Democrat view of government. It's gone from Santa Claus to God. And it's getting serious. At that point in time, it's no longer a fantasy. It's getting really serious. Videos are showing empty shelves across the U.S. There's no news in this, actually. But unfortunately, it's expanding. U.S. stores, food shortages are rising. Today, if you're unfamiliar with the term prepper, you better get ready, says an article at Vaccine Impact. Your life may be in imminent danger, especially if you're not stored up any food. You have no reserve water plans in place and no alternative energy plan in place either, because that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about just shortages of this thing or that thing, but it's across the board. Labor shortages, but especially energy shortages as well. And, you know, you will be, if you don't make preparations, you're going to be at the mercy of the vaccine pimps in Washington and in state governments. Here's a good example of this. You think that's an exaggeration, that you better start laying aside supplies of food right now and figuring out how you're going to feed yourself in the future? There's an Alabama school district that is now saying that it cannot feed its students due to supply chain issues. And they're having these supply chain issues with their food vendors. Quote, as you know, breakfast and lunch is served daily in our schools, they say in a post on Facebook. In previous weeks, we have not received our food deliveries due to suppliers who are short on supplies, short on drivers, and even short on warehouse employees. And how long is it going to be before they're short on fuel to be able to drive the trucks, or short on anything else? So they're short on food, they're short on drivers, short on warehouse employees. We have taken action to open accounts with other vendors in an attempt to diversify our supply options. Breakfast may be impacted more so than lunch in the coming weeks. If possible, we ask that you feed your student breakfast prior to school or try to send a snack along with them. Some of you have noticed our menus have not been updated regularly. When supplies do arrive, we do not always receive what we have requested. So we have to alter the menu, and this is a situation that's frustrating for you as a parent, and as for us, as our ability to feed our students is being greatly impacted. So what's the answer to all this? Well, obviously, the answer is it'll all be fixed if we can get the ports to operate 24/7, except that they won't, and even when they are open, the crane operators are doing a work short slowdown for some reason. Who is incentivizing that? I mean, these people are obviously for sale. They've obviously got a lot of political connections if they were able to get their people paid $250,000 a year. But the answer, I'm sure, is that if we're short of supplies, we're short of drivers, we're short of warehouse employees, we're short of energy, the answer is to fire people. 10, 15, 30% of the population just needs to be fired. Why? Because of vaccines. Nothing matters other than vaccines. You know what we don't have a shortage of? Vaccines. Imagine that. They're able to deliver the vaccines even by the military if necessary. Somehow, though, I don't think they'll be rushing food to you by the military. They will the vaccines, but not the food. So as we look at this mindset of entitlement that is rolling through, it is unbelievable what we see and what is going to be happening. But again, we kind of started this with a Babylon Bee satire. We'll end it with a Babylon Bee satire. Due to supply shortages, husbands may need to begin shopping for Christmas presents prior to December 24th this year. Have they been watching me at the Babylon Bee? How do they know that I fit this stereotype? We're advising all men to start their Christmas shopping sometime before late December this year, said one economist. You might not be able to frantically run into a big box store an hour before closing on Christmas Eve and just throw stuff into your cart willy-nilly because, well, there may not be anything left at that point in time. As a matter of fact, you may not be able to even get there with your car, because it's not just the shortage that is causing a new car shortage. And so that's one of the reasons why you're seeing the price of used cars skyrocket. Even junk cars are skyrocketing. I guess people figure, well, I can get a used car even if it's, you know, been flooded or it's a, you know, got a salvage title or no title at all. I can get it and I can fix it up. Except we got cars that are getting stuck at the garages for weeks because, you know, they get in there and they, oh, I got to get this part. Nobody's got that part. And so now you got the car all torn apart. You can't take it with you, and maybe it wasn't really functional when you got it there anyway. But now you're going to be waiting for weeks for spare parts. It's the same thing that's shutting down the supply of new cars, waiting for a chip somewhere, right? And they're loaded with chips and with special things right now. It has changed dramatically the way that cars are even sold. So most people, even though you have car dealerships, they've had a dramatic decrease in the number of employees that are working selling cars at car dealerships because people are just getting stuff online because of all this. Imagine that. I mean, it's almost like Elon Musk and company were able to change the terms of service for all of us. You know, they didn't want to have car dealerships. They just wanted to get people to buy stuff online. Imagine that. It just worked out so well for him, hasn't it? Maybe he did make that deal with the devil. I don't know. Coal generation in the UK is jumping as wind speed is dropping. This has been going on for quite some time where the wind has stopped blowing there. And again, this is another one of these things like the children's rights movement from the UN that I focused on quite a bit decades ago. I mean, I didn't do as much work on the children's rights thing as I did on the energy stuff and renewable energy about climate gate and things like that. But renewable energy, we were pointing out when it was the very first state to jump into this was Colorado. And so the organization I was with sued Colorado and saying these renewable energy mandates are unsustainable. First part of the problem is that you're going to have a lot of variability with these, with wind and with solar power. You can't have variability on the grid. It's a good thing. Solar power is a good thing. Even a wind generator is a good thing if you are just using it for your own personal use. And that's a great thing to get off the grid, especially now that we see what's happening with the grid. So at the same time, I totally reject solar power and wind power for use on the grid. I highly endorse them from a prepper standpoint and getting off of the grid. But you're also going to need to have some sort of a battery backup for the most part. And so what is happening now is exactly what we said would happen. It happened here in Texas during the winter. They had shortages of other things, a collapsing electrical grid. Part of that was because they went cheap on the windmills because they didn't buy the heating units to keep them from freezing up. Because, you know, we're in Texas, and because the whole reason you're going to windmills is because we got global warming, right? So why would you spend the money on except that they can't predict the climate any better than they can predict the weather, can they? So in the UK, they had already had a situation where they started putting these windmills out in the sea, and they started having this variability. So they decided that what they would do, and we talked about this over a decade ago, they said, all right, we'll make a bigger wind field, right? We'll stretch it out many, many times larger than it was up and down the coast. And what happened was they got bigger troughs and valleys in the electricity generation. In other words, it didn't even it out. You know, where it's going up and down and up and down, those peaks and valleys got much, much higher. And now it's just stopped altogether. And so coal generation is now 3% this last week of electricity production in the UK. They have essentially eliminated coal out of their electric power grid, reaching, that is, the highest level of Britain's power generation in a month amid lower wind speeds this week and outages at gas-powered plants. So when you're powering the grid right now, you've got these renewables, which are going to be wind and solar. You have natural gas, you have nuclear, and you have coal. And they want to get rid of everything except for the windmills and the solar. I mean, this is absolute insanity. Gas has consistently accounted for the largest share of the UK's electricity generation. However, because of the drop of wind and its output, this has caused a shortage across Europe of gas because now everybody's turning to gas because they had shut down coal. And so everybody's turning to gas. Now it's in short supply and the prices are going sky high. And they said that gas has produced 44.8% of Britain's electricity. More than wind, which is at 19%, and nuclear at 12.6%. And notice the wind, which has stopped blowing, that was nearly 20% of their power supply. And that's like, poof, gone. Again, when we look at what is happening with these vaccine mandates, Biden wants to just shoot in the head, you know, 20% or so of the workforce. How's that going to work out? Surging natural gas prices and warm, still weather in September forced the UK to fire up an old coal plant that was on standby in order to meet its electricity demand. The UK has pledged to phase out all coal power by October of 2024. I mean, they're pretty close to just getting rid of even these power stations that were there for backup supply. Late last year, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the UK would aim to become a global leader in offshore wind energy. Well, they have. They're just leading in a different way, leading to show everybody that it doesn't work. And then there's this. This is an article from Zero Hedge. U.S. coal roars back under Biden, unlike under Trump. Now, isn't that interesting? You remember going back to 2016, Hillary Clinton, incredibly arrogant, goes to West Virginia and tells everybody, we're going to take your jobs away. Essentially the same thing that Mike Bloomberg said 4 years later in 2020. He said, you know, the smart ones of us, and that was when he trashed the farmers and everybody just stopped in that. Look at that, he's trashing the farmers, you know, just like Hillary Clinton trashed the coal workers. Yeah, we're going to take your jobs. But what Bloomberg was saying was, you know, we had farmers and we got rid of their jobs and everybody started working in factories and anybody could be a farmer, anybody can work in a factory. We're going to, those of us who are smart now, we're working at ways to throw all of you out of work. And we just have to figure out how we're going to do it without you guys grabbing guillotines and coming and killing us. And that's what he said. He said the guillotines. And so Hillary Clinton was saying, we're going to get rid of the coal workers. And Trump went there, and he carried that state by more than any other state. Bigger voter margin there. And so you would think that all of a sudden, you know, coal would be back. But here's the truth of what happened under Trump. Coal share of total U.S. power generation fell from the time that Trump was elected, 2017, to today. Coal's share of U.S. power generation fell from 35% to 15% under Trump, plummeted. And now it is about 25%. It's come back somewhat under Biden. And that's what they say. One of the biggest ironies to start this decade is the transition from fossil fuel generation to green energy has created a global energy crisis. Now, that's not an irony. That's reality. That was predictable. Been talking about that for decades. It's not sustainable at all. The only thing that it sustains is austerity. It sustains scarcity. It sustains their control over your life. It sustains your serfdom. That's what's sustained. But it's created a global energy crisis that's forcing the U.S., among many other countries, to restart coal-fired power plants monumentally ahead of the winter season in the Northern Hemisphere. The virtue-signaling assault by the Green Lobby. Yeah, can we just give these people some cash and tell them to go away and leave us alone at this point in time? Maybe they'll cash out. You know, they got in early on this thing. They've been getting massive subsidies from the government for these schemes. People like Terry McAuliffe, for example, you know, running for governor. It's amazing to me that I haven't seen these people coming after him. To me, that's a very vulnerable position because he's one of these people who used the green panic to line his pockets. He had a solar power company that was getting massive government subsidies. And then at the same time, that wasn't enough for Terry McAuliffe. So what he did was he started selling citizenship to rich Chinese investors who could invest money in his solar company. That was just a shell. I mean, this thing lasted for a couple of years and went belly up. It was just a way to tap in to all of this green money that was flowing around like Trump was flowing money to the vaccine companies last year. And so if you wanted to immigrate to the U.S. and get a second citizenship and you had money as a Chinese, you could pay Terry McAuliffe and he would, you know, that would be your investment, that you had to make a certain amount of investment and get your citizenship. Terry McAuliffe kept the money from them. He kept the money from the federal government, and he, you know, that organization went belly up. So, you know, all these people, they've made their money. You know, can they just stop? No. They are not going to give up because there's more money to be made. They got in on the ground floor, this green scam, and they're going to continue to go with it. U.S. power plants are on a course to burn 23% more coal this year, in spite of the fact that Biden has made this like a number one priority, to get rid of all fossil fuels. Well, they're not fossil fuels. We haven't run out of them. That was a narrative that was created by the CIA called peak oil. It was a lie. It's always been a lie. Anyway, the first increase since 2013, despite Biden's ambitious plan for a national grid to run on 100% clean energy by 2035. So it's been declining since 2013, the middle of the Obama administration, as intended. And it not only continued to go down during the Trump administration, but it accelerated going down during the Trump administration. And now, because of reality, because of market forces, because of their failed renewables, it's jumping back up again. At the moment, 25% of U.S. electricity produced is derived from coal-fired plants, up 10 percentage points from the beginning of the COVID issue. The largest U.S. exporter of fuel, ex-coal energy and resources, said demand for coal will remain robust well into 2022. Last week, he warned about the domestic supply constraints, and power companies already discussing possible grid blackouts this winter. He said, so now at the point, now that we've shot ourselves in the foot when it comes to coal and natural gas and a lot of these other things, in order to turn everything over to the green energy, you know, just like here in Texas, where we've got plenty of oil. No, we decided we'll do windmills instead. So as we're doing that, and as we have taken coal mining jobs, as a matter of fact, again, look at just the last 4 years under Trump. You know, he got elected, massive election in West Virginia, voting for Trump. And, yeah, that chart right there, good. You want to show that chart? Look at that, going straight down. And under Trump, it went from 53,000 coal jobs to 40,000. And yet it was Hillary that was going to take their jobs. How did that work out? Right? And so now, as this CEO of that coal company is saying, I don't know where the fuel is going to come from to meet demand because we've already started destroying our infrastructure. That's the infrastructure. See, we don't need several trillion dollars from the government to build infrastructure. The government has been subsidizing an unworkable infrastructure, been mandating that the infrastructure that works be shut down, and shutting it down in terms of supply chains as well. And now they're going to throw trillions of dollars to their cronies in this corruption scheme, and to come up with a completely different type of energy generation when they broke what worked and what was already there, spending money to shut it down. 23% of utilities are switching away from gas this fall and winter to burn more coal, but there's not enough coal miners to increase the mining output. And so as a result, you know, they're advertising $100,000 jobs for coal miners. You know, I mean, it beats going through dumpsters if you can't get a job as a, you know, if they won't hire you being unvaccinated. And if it's undergoing a depression like that, you might actually be able to get a good price on a home. The goal of the policy, if you listen to what's being said in Western countries, in the context of climate discussions, but it is climate destruction, is not only to stop building new coal, but to eliminate existing capacity to burn coal, said a managing director of Research Energy Partners. He says, this is a moment in time when that idea is going to be challenged. This is another idea that we need to challenge. Absolutely is. I'm not going to take another break because I've got a lot to cover here, and we've only got about 15 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about the mandated Trump shots. Because as I mentioned earlier in the show, now, one state in Germany has gone full Nazi. Everything except for the yellow stars, right? If you're not vaccinated, they can now block you from even going into a supermarket to buy food in the German state of Hesse. Supermarkets in Frankfurt. Oh, that's Frankfurt is in the state of Hesse, I guess. So I guess that means no Frankfurters for you in Frankfurt if you are not vaccinated. I wonder if you can get any hamburgers in Hamburg. I'll take freedom fries with that. Thank you. So supermarkets in Frankfurt can now implement their rules that only allow vaccinated and COVID-recovered people into their premises. Well, I think I've had COVID. Don't you think you've had COVID? You sure look like you've had COVID. I think we've all had COVID, haven't we? I survived the last couple of years. I must have had COVID some point in time because, according to Fauci, everybody is going to come down with it. So I guess I had it and I survived. That's why I said one of my friends from back in North Carolina got very sick this year and took ivermectin, and it just, boom, you know, started bringing him back right away. So he could just feel like a warm sensation in his chest as it was breaking all that stuff up. He said, I got my positive COVID test, and I'm going to frame it like I didn't frame my diploma, and that's going to be my ticket to life. In fact, I'm recovered from COVID. So they got something called the 2G rule. It's not 5G, it's 2G. It refers to public places being given the option to allow entry only to the vaccinated or people who have recovered from COVID. It has so far been allowed in half of Germany's states for certain public places like bars, restaurants, and nightclubs and cinemas. You see, what they're doing is they had to write a rule. And think about this. What we're talking about here is discrimination, right? You can't kick somebody out because of their health issues. I mean, we had the Americans with Disabilities Act to cover that, even to make sure that you are going to have facilities that are going to be accessible to people who are handicapped. Because we're not going to allow people to be kicked out of public spaces because of their skin color, because of health issues or handicaps or anything like that. And so now what they're doing is they're writing a rule to say, well, now you can discriminate against people. See? This is how we are reversing and turning upside down and inside out the principles on which Western civilization has been built. The individual. The right of informed consent, the respect for people, and the access to public places. That is fundamental. If you've got a public facility, we have long stated that that is not going to be the base. You're not going to have any discrimination against people in these public spaces. But now we are demanding it. They are pressuring, even threatening, and terrorizing these corporations to do this in certain cases. So in Hess, the government said that it has taken the decision to go a step further and to allow shops to bar entry to the unvaccinated at the request of the sector. See, they requested it. Yeah, right. Well, some of them did. And, you know, quite frankly, I would not be surprised if a lot of these major corporations that were the essential partners of Trump last year went to the Biden administration, whoever it is that's making decisions there, and said to them, you know, we really do want you to put out a press release so we can have an excuse to get rid of this, the large payroll that we have, because our business has dropped and we don't want to keep these people. So they want to say it allows shops, now here's the incentive, and this is the next step of pressure. It allows shops to drop any mask wearing and social distancing rules. So see, that's the carrot. So in this particular case, what they did, and I think this is probably the way that it would have worked out under Trump, because Trump is all about the vaccine. He still is all about the vaccine. Everybody says, well, he's not going to mandate it. No, he would have been smarter. He would have given incentives, and those incentives would have looked something like this. You can drop all your mask-wearing rules and all your social distancing rules if you only allow vaccinated people inside your building. How about that? Well, I'm not punishing anybody for doing it. It's just they wanted to do it. And I'm just letting them do it. You ought to get the shot. It's great. You know, you should have it. It's wonderful. It's a big, beautiful shot. I gave big, beautiful bundles of billions of dollars to these pharmaceutical executives. You think I gave them all that money so we wouldn't use this stuff? Come on. You know, it's a club. You know, just you can be a part of the club. As a matter of fact, if you want to go to the nightclub, you got to get vaccinated, or otherwise you're not going to be in there. It's going to be a club, and you ain't going to be in it. That's the way they would have mandated it. It would have been corporate coercion. It was always going to be about corporate coercion. But now Biden, and this is what I said. I said, I don't support Trump because he's going to put everybody to sleep. He's a pacifier in everybody's mouth. And the GOP will not oppose him on any of this stuff, no matter how bad it is. And I said, they will oppose Biden for doing the same things that Trump has done simply because of partisan advantage. The Democrats aren't going to oppose any of this authoritarian stuff because they want it. The street, the Democrat street wants it. And especially the politicians. But I said, with Biden, we've got an opportunity because he's going to move so fast. He's such an authoritarian. Always has been an authoritarian. Has always hated the idea of natural rights. Has always hated the Declaration of Independence. He attacked Clarence Thomas because of that. So I said, with him, we got an opportunity. He may try to boil the frogs so fast, and he may not be able to withhold his authoritarian urges, that he's going to wake people up and piss everybody off. So far, that's happening. Now, it remains to be seen what we're going to do about it, right? The people are awake, and they're really angry, and that's a really good thing. The decision comes after a Frankfurt court ruled in favor of a barbecue utensil store, which had launched a legal objection to the fact that it could not exclude people from its premises. You see how this works? And this is exactly the way that would have been done here. You know, we'll get, and I said that because we'd already seen it being done with Brad Little. You had the Idaho Republican legislature, Brad Little, a Republican governor. Some people in the Idaho legislature said, we don't like these executive orders. We need to put an end to them. So let's call a special session. Brad Little said, no, I'm going to shut that down. How could he do that? I mean, this is like colonial governors. And so he shut it down. And then he put together his own rules and he called them back and had them pass those. His rules were, if you do everything that we say, if you force people to wear masks, if you force people to do social distancing, then we will protect you against any lawsuits if somebody claims that they got COVID on your premises. But if you don't do that, you might as well put a big sign up in your door that says, sue me. And so that was what he did to run it through. And that's essentially what they're doing in Germany. What they're saying in Germany is, well, we're going to give the freedom of choice to the businesses, and they can exclude people who are vaccinated if they want to. And why would they want to? Well, because we will now waive those rules that we were forcing on everybody last year if they only allow vaccinated people in, because it's about the vaccine. You got to get the shot. Got to get the shot, no matter what. Got to get the shot. Court said in its ruling earlier in October that it had considerable legal reservations about the exclusion of sales outlets and similar establishments under the so-called 2G rule. It has proved controversial, with many people complaining that it excludes people who cannot be vaccinated and that it has the potential to widen societal divisions over the pandemic response, which is exactly what it was designed to do. So they're allowing people to be pushed out of all businesses now, even for groceries and for other things that are essential. Which brings me to this story. You know, I began with a story about a woman raped on an elevated train while everybody stood by and watched and did nothing to help her. No good Samaritans there. And that's really what our society has become. That's what our hospitals have become. And this story out of Afghanistan, starving Afghan parents are forced to sell their children to survive. Now, my question to you is, would you sell your children to survive? This is not a hypothetical. This question is being presented to you now in a lot of different ways. She told the journal, Wall Street Journal, that was reporting on this. She said her husband doesn't have any work, and the only way out of debt is to sell her 3-year-old daughter to the local lender. And why does he want her daughter? What is he going to do to her daughter? Use the child as a slave, as a prostitute, or worse, right? So when we look at this, you have to, as you're making the calculation, as you're being pressured to decide about this vaccine, I would say don't sell your children to survive. Because that's what you'll be doing if you let this precedent be established. We've had a lot of bad precedents established in the last few years. Not just Trump. It began under the Biden administration. It began before that with the George W. Bush administration. It began before that with the Clinton administration. My entire life, it has been every administration, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, they have been adding horrific new powers and horrific new power grabs and precedents. But that trend has been accelerating under every president lately. It accelerated under Trump. And quite frankly, it accelerated from where it was under Biden. I mean, when you look at what happened with this COVID tyranny, the establishment of the COVID industrial complex, that's far worse than Obamacare, folks. Far worse. Look at what it's done to our hospitals. It used to be a theoretical that we would have death panels deciding who can and cannot get health care. And now that's what's happening already. No, you can't have an organ transplant because both you and the donor have to have the vaccine. Even though, you know, she's not jumping the line. She's got a friend from a Bible study. And they said, no, you can't have it. So we have seen our government change very rapidly. And if we are going to play along with this, try to accommodate this instead of resisting this, we will be selling our children into slavery just as certainly as this woman in Afghanistan. And we'll be doing it because we think we're going to survive. And let me tell you, all that's going to do is buy those poor parents in Afghanistan just a little bit of time. And if you make this, if you trade this off and take this bargain, then you're just going to be buying yourself a little bit of time. Let's not do this to our kids. Let's not do this to our grandkids. We don't need to sell our children in order to survive. Do you trust God in all of this? Every day, God finds a different way to ask you, do you trust me? And I'll just repeat again from the Psalms. I was young and now I'm old, but I've never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. We don't have to worry. We may not be comfortable. We may not have the... The excessive things that we have enjoyed in this country previously. Life might get a lot tougher. Life has always been a lot tougher for people than it has been for us right now. Our biggest danger right now, the thing that is tempting us to sell ourselves and our children into slavery, is the comfortable life that we have lived. I've heard it described as affluenza. Affluenza is what is threatening us more than COVID, and it is strangling us, and it is debilitating us. And so it begins. In New York City, a judge has ruled that a father cannot visit a three-year-old daughter unless vaccinated. We're going to see this play out in every single way. The lawyer for the father says, my client is not a conspiracy theorist. Well, I am. So what? What is a conspiracy theorist? Well, first of all, it's a label that was put out there by the FBI to shut up people who were questioning the ridiculous narrative of a lone gunman taking out JFK with a bolt-action rifle, a moving target, shooting from behind a tree, a magic bullet that changed multiple directions that was sold by Arlen Specter. People weren't buying that, especially after they saw the Zapruder film. So the FBI came out and said, well, you people think that there's a conspiracy to kill? It's just Lee Harvey Oswald. They created that as a term to shut down discussion, to demonize people, to ridicule people. So I embrace that. If the FBI is going to come up with a propaganda label to shut down anybody who is questioning their official narrative, I embrace that. So, yeah, so what? I am a conspiracy theorist. I'm happy to say that because investigating conspiracies is part of investigation. Everybody does that. If you've got a detective who's looking at a crime, he comes up with a theory, and then you start looking at it. And, of course, the government has offered us many conspiracy theories in the past that don't hold up to scrutiny. They don't hold up to critical thinking. Being a conspiracy theorist and looking at stuff, investigating stuff, questioning what you're told, that is part of critical thinking. I don't make any apologies for that at all. This judge must feel that 80 million Americans who aren't vaccinated are placing their children at imminent risk or harm, and therefore the court should intervene and remove these children from their parents. Why now? Why now? Well, because no matter what, everybody's got to get the shot. So as I said, OSHA has now sent the employer vaccine rule back to the White House for final review. This was reported by Bloomberg on October the 12th, so that was Tuesday last week, I think. Here's another one of these issues. Again, they violated people's First Amendment rights. They violated the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. They violated HIPAA. And they have also violated their requirements to have a public commenting period. They're not going to put this out for public comments. That's always been required to look at the impact on the economy. There has never been a rule or regulation by law or by bureaucracy that has had more of an impact on the economy. And they're going to skip that. That's yet another way for you to challenge this if you don't want to go along with it. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.